And your sink's all fixed and everything?
Hey there, what's that?
Your sink's all fixed and everything?
There's a water leak. But yeah. How are you?
Good, how are you?
How are you? Cool?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Get your hospital.
Yeah,
I sent you a number.
Yeah, we haven't done anything since we finished the bathroom. No hand people in. Yeah. And Carol got some sort of bonus.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I liked it too.
Yeah, I like Carol. Yeah. Matter of fact, we had two classes canceled.
Really?
Oh, bummer. Oh.
Well, my wife, she's not throwing up or anything. It's just,
really stuffy nose. Really, really bad.
But Carol's got it.
Well, hello, Ryan.
Hello.
Hi there.
Yeah,
good.
Hello.
Doggone it, you put me by Council Member Roach. I was hoping for you.
Yeah. You lucky guy.
Not bad. How are you?
Alrighty.
Good to see you.
Give me the thumbs up.
Watch out, Steve. You're sitting next to the deputy mayor.
Thank you.
Hello.
I knew you were
over there.
Kelly, you're over. You're reading right there.
Sorry.
No worries. I thought you were on the show. I was thinking about, like,
are you
maybe.
Yeah, we're all
push the other.
Dan Swatman over there.
Dan, I know you want to sit right there. I always do, too, but
you I just like, this is like, you're here?
Yes.
Where's Debbie at?
They're expecting her. Your sign is right there.
Oh, really?
But, yeah.
I've already sat down. It's too much effort, so I could have done that. All right. There's more than one way.
Have we started? Are we ready to start? Okay, welcome, everybody. This is the special Joint City Council Workshop Planning Commission meeting for January 16th, 2024, the City of Bonnie Lake. First thing we always do is stand and salute our flag, so if everybody could stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, could you call the roll, please?
Mayor McCullough.
I'm here.
Deputy Mayor Carter.
Here.
Councilmember Baldwin.
Here.
Councilmember Fullerton.
Here.
Councilmember Hubler.
Here.
Our owl is squawking.
It has its speaker enabled.
Councilmember McClyman?
Here.
Councilmember Roach?
Here.
And Councilmember Swatman?
Present.
And then for Planning Commission, I have Planning Commissioner Chair Solheim?
Here.
Commissioner Benin?
Here.
Commissioner Dahl?
Here.
Commissioner Sarver?
Here.
Commissioner...
And Commissioner Wilkins?
Here. All right, seems that we do have an agenda modification. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would like to amend the agenda to, hold on, let me see what is here, to item D to table it to do the weather forecast until February 6th.
Well, I'm certainly in agreement with that. Do we have to go through the formal motion and all of that to be able to do it, or can we just do it?
Put it to a vote.
I think we just put it to a vote.
All right, let's put it to a vote. All in favor of tabling item D?
Do we have a second?
Oh, I guess we do have to go through all of
second.
That. Okay. Any discussion on the matter before we take it to a vote? All right, so all in favor of tabling item D off of our agenda tonight due to our weather restrictions, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, it looks like that we have tabled item D for this evening. All right, now we'll go to the Planning Commission open discussion. Mr. Sullivan, the floor is yours.
Mayor, second.
Yes.
Harry, can you mute your mic, please? Can you mute your mic, Carrie?
Yeah, we can hear you. She's asking you to mute it because we're getting feedback here.
Okay.
Unless you want to say something.
Here we go. Yep.
Ah, very good. All right, Ms. Sullivan, could you start us off, please?
We get the presentations pulled up, make everything going, and then I will we'll get moving forward on this. Once I get the okay from the city clerk's office. All right, Jimmy, go ahead.
Oh, I know.
It's over, right next to you. Yeah.
I'll make sure we don't. Don't worry, I'm at an angle. Yep,
this one. We good? All right. Good evening, Council and Planning Commission. We thought this would be a good time to do a joint briefing with both the Planning Commission and City Council as we get kind of close to the end of our parks plan project. As we put in the agenda packet, this is something we've been working on for about 14 months. Getting close to the final stage, but we still had some feedback that we needed to gather from the Planning Commission and City Council based on comments we received over the time. So tonight we're not asking for any action. We are asking for to look at how we've divided the projects up, how we've kind of the conceptual designs, and if there's any feedback, we'll gladly take it. But tonight is more about providing a briefing about how we're kind of dividing this project up, the timeline for the project, how we're grouping projects, and the kind of the background for people who have not been part of the process since kind of day one. So that was being said, I'm going to turn it over to, so we're going to give an overview of the project, what we've heard so far, some key project recommendations, a discussion on those so we can help refine the plan that we will bring back forth to the public. There'll be many more opportunities to provide public comment. We will be doing an environmental analysis, and there's a public comment period tied to that. We will also be doing a public hearing with the Planning Commission before they make their recommendation. There's a public comment period before that. And for all of those, the actual plan will be released because we'll have it finished written. We're in the final stages of doing that right now. And then, again, when the council does their adoption that night at the council meeting, there will be a chance for public comment as well. So many more opportunities. This is more for us to kind of gauge what the elected officials and planning commissions want. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Steve Dew, who is with Conservation Tax. He is the lead from the consultant firm that we hired to walk through this presentation. We have tried to incorporate changes that we've heard over time and kind of provide some additional background. So with that, Steve.
Thank you, Jason. Good evening, Mayor, Deputy Mayor, Council members, Commissioners. Again, for the record, my name is Steve Dew, Conservation Techniques. Our firm is leading the effort. It's a team effort to help the city pull together the Parks, Trails, Recreation, Open Space Plan. As Jason noted, we've got a brief presentation to hit some of the highlights of what we heard and dive into the specific site master plans before talking about time frames and moving forward. So, who's doing slides? There we go. Just as a refresher, I know many of you have participated in prior conversations about this project and or attended past events, but the Parks, Trails, and Recreation Open Space Plan is intended to be the city's 25-year guide for all things parks, recreation, trails. So it takes a long-term view of enhancements, improvements, and upgrades for the city's park, trail, and recreation system. As part of that, it will also have a focused six-year capital plan that will help identify key projects to move forward in a more tight time frame, more near term, which will help guide and inform future budget discussions between council and staff. Next. As a reminder, the process so far has been a robust community engagement process. We've heard from over 1,800 participants in the process over the last year. That includes several different ways in which we've heard from folks, primarily through a community survey. But there was also substantial event tabling during the summertime. We held two public meetings. One was online, and the second was online plus in person. Stakeholder discussions and a project steering committee helped guide the direction of the plan. So overall, we've heard from a lot of people, and the survey provided some really strong baseline data. As for the survey, again, we had just about 850 responses from the community on that. And as part of that, it was an English and Spanish survey. It was both a random sample mail survey as well as an online-only survey, so those two data sets were kept separate. We aggregated the information moving forward, and just want to hit some of the highlights. One point is virtually everybody who took the survey, 95%, feel that parks, recreation, trail opportunities are either essential or important to the quality of life in Bonnie Lake. So that's pretty substantial. Can't really get much higher than that. So it's good to know that the community feels that there's value in parks and recreation. Additionally, about two-thirds feel that they're either very or somewhat satisfied with the parks and open spaces that the city provides. So again, there's a little room for improvement there, and part of that is that the city has some undeveloped sites that we'll talk to in a minute. As far as reasons for coming out and, you know, being active in parks and on trails, et cetera, walking and running came in at the top position there with 65%, again, two-thirds, coming out to be active on trails, to walk, to run. And that actually is quite parallel with regional, statewide, and national data that trails and trail usage comes in at the top and has for probably the last 20-plus years. So seeing consistency in the survey responses helps us feel comfortable that we're getting some good feedback from the community. The second tier, the kind of medium blue color there on the chart, represents the kind of no-cost, low-cost sorts of activities, things that are either family-oriented or group-oriented, like going out for picnicking, being at the playground with your family, or more solo endeavors like relaxation, fitness, things, again, that you can do pretty easy on your own schedule and are generally unprogrammed. Moving down the list, you get to more specialized activities and more programmed activities, whether it's sport programs proper or being out on, let's say, a sport court, playing pickup games, participating in programs, and then further down the list, you get to more specialized activities like paddleboarding, skate parks, things that represent some great uses of facility space, but also are a smaller number of the population that participate in those activities. As far as some reasons why people aren't coming out to Bonnie Lake Parks more often, a couple comments were that there's not enough parking, they feel it's too crowded, that's primarily about Allen York Park, and or don't know what's offered. So a communications issue about what's available and where to go and how to be active in the city. As far as program amenities, or priority amenities, I should say, we asked a question and basically said, of this list, how supportive are you of having the city add these over time? One thing to note is if you take a quick scan down the blue tones there, majorities of residents responded favorably for all amenities noted. Walking and biking trails came out at the top, again, consistent with the usage that we noted in the prior question. So again, internal consistency between questions is handy. But beyond that, you really get into the notion that there's a latent demand for a lot of different activities in the city. One thing to note is that we use this data to help inform the four site master plans that we'll talk to you in a moment. And nearly every one of these items is represented in those four master plans. We also talked about recreation programming. And in the realm of programming, it was more of a Goldilocks type question that we asked, is the porridge too hot, too cold, or just right? But in this case, it was a list of program types, and we asked, are there too many? Is there just the right amount or not enough of these? So you can see just by the chart that the interest in the community shows that there's a fairly good balance between what's offered and what's needed. There are a few items that do rise to the top in terms of latent need, and that's around family programs, need for additional community events, and youth activities. Beyond that, you get into more specialized programming and also the notion that you need some space, classroom space, school space, etc., to facilitate some of those. So taking the feedback from the community survey, taking the feedback from the tabling events and the other discussions we've had with the community, a couple core themes surfaced from all that information. One is really the notion of taking care of what you have, renovating and upgrading your existing parks to make them more functional, more accessible, improving ADA compliance so people of all abilities can participate in recreation activities, addressing safety and maintenance, primarily around trail corridors, making sure that they're clear, they're lit, they're well signed, and upgrading playgrounds over time to make sure that they are both safe and functional. Another core item is just continuing to build out your system. As I noted earlier, the city does have several parks that are either undeveloped or underdeveloped, so building those out over time will help add more amenities. And there's some strong support in the community to do that. Part of that is building out the trail system and using Fennel Creek as a spine and linking to that over time to tie the community together. And then adding more user conveniences, things like restrooms, parking, signage, picnic areas, benches, just to enable folks to be active, be out, and be comfortable. The third core item is expanding recreation opportunities, and this is this is related to the chart that I showed earlier, where the majority of people said they want everything, and that is that there's demand for pickleball, additional field sport space, disc golf, off-leash playgrounds that are accessible and all-inclusive, so again, people of all abilities can utilize them. As well as splash pads and additional events. So, again, that relates to what we saw in the survey, but it also relates to the concept plans that we'll show in a minute. Before diving into those concept plans, I want to just do a couple quick slides as a teaser for what you'll see in the draft Parks, Trails, Recreation, Open Space Plan, and that's around the notion of different system analyses that we did in the draft to date. One is around the idea of examining system gaps, and those gaps can take different forms. In particular, gaps around distribution of parks and trails and open space, so physical access, who has proximate access to a park, or who has to travel an exorbitant distance to get to something that's useful to them. Gaps also exist in the term of accessibility, and by that I mean ADA accessibility and universal access. So looking at improvements to make sure that people, again, of all abilities can recreate and participate. And then the gaps also come through from our site assessments, where we had our landscape architect visit all the properties to make sure that the city can plan for an interesting park system that provides a diversity of spaces and different ways to engage. And then again, looking at today's population needs as well as going out 25 years. Quick snapshot of what this map represents. It is what we call a travel shed map. So if you focus on the kind of pinkish hues, those represent travel sheds around the city's park properties. So what we do is we drop a pin on a map, just like you do when you tell your phone, hey, how do I get to this location? And from each pin, it represents a legitimate park access point. It's not a property boundary. So it then links to the street network, and we can kind of tie all the pins together to create these areas, these little blobs that show if you live within the pinkish hue, you're within, in this case, a half mile of a city park. If you're outside of that, then you're in kind of the white background color. This particular map also shows homeowner association parks. Those are in the kind of purpley color. And those then are done in the same manner, but they are trimmed to the subdivisions because the homeowner associations are typically private and are affiliated with a specific subdivision. So we wanted to represent that. So the plan itself, we'll talk in more detail about this, but just wanted to offer a quick snapshot of this, so when you see it, it's a little familiar to you.
Do you have a walkability thing?
It's a travel shed, so it's based on a distance, not a travel time. So
makes sense the way I'm looking at it.
Okay. And
the white areas, I'm looking at the white areas, and they're a lot closer than some of the pink areas are to Allen York.
It's based on the road system, so if there's a disconnect in the road or a creek passes through or there's no way to go from one side to the other, then it kind of cuts it off. So instead of a circle on a map that you can kind of fly to, we can look more in more detail if there's specific areas that don't make sense. But
and then there's parks that aren't on there and stuff, but that's okay. That's good.
Okay, we can look through that. So next slide, Jason. The analyses also look at some metrics, and this chart is a variation on something that the Washington State Recreation and Conservation Office put together as a tool in their planning manual, and the RCO, for those who might not know, is the state's funding agency for all things parks. So utilizing their tool helps the city pursue future grants in that you can share information in a way that they're familiar with seeing it. So in this particular case, the metrics include things around quality of existing facilities. So that quality comes from data from the survey about people's sense of importance around parks, the quality that we saw on the ground from our site assessments. It includes metrics around distribution related to the maps I just showed. This one particularly is trimmed down from what's in the plan, but also looking at usage. So again, you're starting to track some benchmarks. So going forward, if you repeat some of these analyses or some of the questions in the survey, you can track them over time.
So are you saying that your survey generated that D for satisfaction?
Satisfaction, yes.
Okay.
And that satisfaction is based on, again, the aggregate survey data around how satisfied people are with the current system. So as parks get developed or as Allen York gets improved or Midtown gets built, I would imagine this value would change in the positive manner going forward.
Is there a way to compare that to other municipalities?
We can look at it. We've done surveys throughout the Puget Sound region, and we can see what's common, but each survey is a little unique, so it's maybe a little apples to oranges, but we can take a look.
Question I have is, did y'all do any sort of return demographics, the people who actually return the surveys? Did you have any sort of demographics involved as far as family, single, age, and particularly what part of the city they live in?
Three of those four, yes.
Okay.
So we did, yeah, we did age group, we did households with or without children,
okay,
broken out by how many children, as well as region. So we split up the city in, I think, three or four different quadrants.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I just had one question, too. You said that there was 1,800 people that had responded, and then in another section you said that there were about 800 or so. I'm trying to figure out what is the difference between those two numbers.
Yeah, thanks. The community survey captured responses from 843 participants, survey respondents. So that's how many surveys we collected.
Yeah.
The balance of that 1,800 came from tabling events. That were, I think, 11 different tabling events during the summer where we had displays, people would put dots up, as well as open house, two different open houses.
So is that 1,800 with the 800-something or so respondents, or is that 1,800 total, which includes the ones that responded in the survey?
Includes.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm sorry, I missed it. What was the total number of surveys that were?
843.
How many were responded?
Correct.
What was the total count of surveys that were?
We mailed out 2,500. And, again, it was a split method survey. So the mail survey was mailed out to 2,500, and honestly, I can't recall the number of returns on the mail survey, but it was probably, I'm not even going to guess. I'd have to look that up. I don't want to misspeak.
When it came to the survey, we kind of tried to do it two ways. One, we tried to do a statistically valid method where the consultants randomly selected 2,500 addresses throughout the city. We mailed out responses. We mailed out specific surveys to those addresses to get a statistically valid survey that way. But we also wanted to gain broader feedback from the community. So we took the same survey but then just opened it up to the public so that we could gain a wider breadth of responses. But we kept the data pool responses separately in the analysis that the consultants were looking at. So we did it both ways to try to cast as wide a net as we could.
So this is the random?
The 59% represents the aggregate of the 843 responses from the survey.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Is there another question?
Yeah, I just, again, I'm not trying to make this a long-winded discussion, but I have mentioned it before in just, you know, when we're looking at mathematics and we're analyzing this data and this random sampling, and then you have 843 responses, you know, plus the, you know, additional to then create the kind of a larger buffer from the tabling events and things like that, it just still feels very much like a small percentage of the community and not a representation of the community, because I mean, we're talking 20,000 people in a city, and I understand how random sampling works and, you know, trying to figure out how to, you know, best represent the populace and what they would want. And I guess that's just, I don't know that, you know, 800 people, you know, making decisions that are really big, helping make a decision that is very large, is the best way. I just think that Bonnie Lake needs to, I don't know if there's another method to try to figure out to reach a larger amount of the populace percentage-wise.
I will say we have done every tool that we could afford to do, right? yes, there's always more and more and more you could do, but there's also a cost to do more and more. And I would caution to say that the 843 represents 843 people. It represents 843 households. So
it's still a fairly small number in comparison to 20.
But that's 20,000 people, but I think we have about 3,500 or about 5,000 housing units, somewhere around there. So you have to compare the numbers you're looking at. I agree with you that the 20,000 and 800 is different. The other part of it, too, is...
Mr. Sullivan, hold on just a second, please. The question that I have is actually Councilmember Baldwin's question led into what I was thinking. And as far as the comparative analysis to other cities, are we, the response that we got, are we in the lower category? Are we in the higher category? Is it about average from what you get from all the other municipalities out there as far as you achieving your data?
Yeah, great question. And, again, we've done community surveys over the last 15 years in the Puget Sound area. And I would say that the response rate on this was about average.
Average? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there are certainly communities where we've had stronger responses, but we've also had lower.
Okay.
So it's a comfortable number. And what I've noted earlier about internal consistency with questions, it also holds true across the different subgroups.
Yeah.
So we also looked at the different responses by subgroup, so different age groups, different locations of the city, different household composition. And for the most part, there is consistency between the general response and the subgroup response. So even though, you know, it's a smaller sample size in aggregate relative to the community size, the internal consistency makes us feel comfortable that the responses are legitimate, if that helps.
Okay. And Ms. Sullivan, did you have anything to add? I'm sorry to cut you off on that.
No, I think Steve wrapped that up perfectly.
All right. Councilmember McClellan.
I guess there's one last question about the grading idea there. Is that have you ever seen how many cities would say their satisfaction is B or higher?
Few.
Okay.
And satisfaction is a tricky one in that it's a snapshot in time and it's based on when you do it and what they see on the ground. So if there's a news event that causes a negative reaction on a survey, that comes through and you can't control that. So that's why you want to do periodic resurveying of different types of questions.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Ready to move on?
Next. So the last teaser slide for the upcoming plan that you'll see is this one's in particular about trails. So we also, as a plan, are planning forward. So we looked at the trail system as it is today and started to think about what that would look like as a conceptual, grown, evolved trail system. So we looked at trail access and distribution. So we did travel shed mapping for trails, much like we did for parks. So that'll be in the document. But for the conceptual trails system, we are looking at recreational trails, which I'm calling off-road trails. So think of Fennel Creek and think of what will be the Noxious Memorial Trail that goes east-west, but also on-street connections to just create that connectivity between what you've got and the other infrastructure that exists in Pawnee Lake. So that's made distinct on the map by two different colors. Kind of the magenta, purpley color is the recreational or off-road trail, and the blue is the on-road connections. And the dash represents the future, solid represents existing. So the map really is intended to show the future conceptual network. And we've labeled them by different trail segments, and some of them have alternative routes that we've noted in a superscript. So again, this is just a teaser at this stage, just to show that we're thinking through how the community can become more connected through trails and sidewalk enhancements. And I think I'll leave that at that. So moving on, I just want
more to come on that one.
Yeah. So moving on, I want to transition into the four different site plans. I believe you've all seen these in various iterations in the past, so I'm not going to really walk through all of the components, but I do want to walk through the grouping of how those components could be constructed going forward. So, as you...
As Steve walks through this, I want the commission and the city council to keep in mind, as we're talking about the 25-year build-out of the park system, so this is... If we did all of this and we got to day 25 years from now, your park system is basically built out, and then you would be talking after that about what's next. So this is really kind of a holistic, comprehensive look of a 25-year plan that we're going to take in smaller chunks over time. So we're not envisioning this to happen overnight. This is a 25-year plan, so we're trying to figure out how to group these projects, and it's going to be important later how we play this out. So I just kind of wanted to leave that in. Sorry, Steve.
That's fine. And as part of that, the notion of grouping comes as, construction efficiencies, certain amenities are either located next to each other or can be done in a similar work environment. So there's some efficiencies around how you group things, and also there gives you the potential for pursuing funding or specialized resources for any of the particular types of grouped projects. So as a project team, we try to just identify ways in which we can chunk out the different park developments because, again, some of these are substantial investments, and you're not going to be in a position to do a project like Allen York Park all at one big bite. There's a lot going on here. So let me just walk you through how it's segmented, and we can go from there. So as you can see in the graphic, we've got them labeled by letter, and you can see the call-outs on the side. So Area A represents what would be the Northwest parking lot, and that would be for car and for boat trailers. So that would support the boat launch, but it would also support the sport fields that would exist in the north corner. Area B would be a conversion of Field 4 into an artificial turf, a multi-sport field, and would accommodate some space for temporary portable restrooms going forward. And A and B can move forward potentially as a linked project or earlier, because neither of those rely on what would be the rerouting of West Tabs Highway. So that's another consideration. So moving through the graphic, Area C along the water is the boat launch relocation, boat queuing, and some piers to really improve the function of the boat launch space and to accommodate improved turnarounds and, again, better access to the water for trailers. Area D is one of the two core central parts of Allen York that would exist on the north side of the rerouted West Taps Highway, and that would include the amphitheater and Great Lawn, a maintenance building, and some other related improvements. And adjacent to that in Area A or Area E would be the playgrounds, the spray park, concessions, restrooms, picnic area. We can move on, Jason.
Well, I appreciate your courtesy on the description, but the lawn ain't that great.
It will be.
The spray park, and it will be.
Maybe not right after.
Lawn made of grapes.
There you go. And then adjacent to the playground area, F is the beachfront upgrades, and F and C could potentially be grouped together to then assist with permitting enhancements and other waterfront or in-water work that might be needed. And the beachfront improvements would be basically bringing in sand, enhancing the beach, the feel of the beach, and relocating the sand volleyball. Area G, H, and I are kind of a core area on the south side of West Taps Highway rerouted. G would be the southern parking lot to support the things on the south side. Area H would be a new basketball court, a renovated tennis court with pickleball lines, and I would be primarily trails through the rest of the park to link things together on the north-south basis and represent the northern extension of the kind of Fennel Creek to Allen York Park Trail. Last, in Area J, there would be a playground that would be part of a project that's adjacent to 5 that can move forward also separately.
Dog run any place in the park?
Not in this park. The question was about a dog run. We have that in the next graphic. In Midtown, there is, at the very bottom, you can see Dog Park. In E, we can get to that in a second. Midtown, a slightly smaller property, accommodates a slightly fewer number of sub-areas to work with.
How do you get smaller with Midtown? I thought it was 40-plus acres.
Councilmember Swatman, I think he was referring to as compared to Allendale Park, which is significantly larger than 40 acres. If you take all of, all chunks of Midtown Park, or Allendale Park. That's, I think it's the scale. The park's just less, this one's only 40 acres as compared to Allendale Park, which is.
So with Midtown, Area A would be the central sport field, one of two sport fields, and that again would be artificial turf with multi-sport field space, pickleball complex of 6 courts plus parking to support that core central area. Area B would be set aside for community and senior center relocation. Area C would be the spray park and playground and additional parking to support that portion of the park. Area D would be the second of two sport fields. Again, artificial turf and multi-sport. And the remainder of the site, Area E, represents everything else, which is trails throughout the site, bike skills, a mountain bike course, pump track, disc golf, and off-leash dog park.
Before we move on, and I'm not even going to question the percentage of parking spaces versus what we have available as parks. But what I'm not seeing on there is the ingress, egress, and the and what might be developed around the park to accommodate the additional traffic that would be going on to have people available for the park. Was that considered in this?
I would defer, Jason.
Yeah, the access for the park, and it's adopted in our future road plan, is to extend to 100th. Which is along the north side of the park and then ties into 204th.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the traffic signals that go out to both 14 and South Ferry. And then our adopted future street plan, 100th, is extended all the way over to 214th
mm-hmm.
to provide access that way. So that's kind of the network of access. Because of the stormwater pond, we really can't get a lot of access directly to South Prairie. So that's kind of how the access as overall was looked at, is trying to get people kind of to 214th or 204th, and then from there out to 410 or South Prairie.
And is that those issues been brought up with the Tarragon negotiations? Because that particular issue came up a couple of years ago as far as what they were going to develop in that area as far as accommodating the additional traffic that would go along.
Yeah, so there's the Tarragon project, which is under the current development agreement, and at this time that's kind of still sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
The adopted future road plan is part of that extended road network in both adopted by the city council as part of the future roadmap. So any development that would occur on the Tarragon property would be required to comply with that future road network and build the development around that future road network.
Okay.
And then, so just some other highlights. We did update this plan, I think the most significant, based on comments we received from the City Council. Two things to kind of keep in mind. You'll notice that there's a building 2 in right next between C and B. That building is not something proposed to be constructed by the city, only a pad left. We had heard questions about whether or not there would be availability for other agencies or groups to provide indoor recreational space. I think one thing that was discussed at the meeting was possibly working with the city of Sumner on an aquatic center. We've heard conversations about maybe having the library there as part of some master complex. So what we felt we could do to continue to move forward our plan as other groups and agencies want to come forward with as it relates to indoor recreational facilities is to have a footprint big enough that would accommodate that. And so it's not in our funding package. It's not going to be in the capital plan. It's simply a placeholder that there would be a basically pre-developed building pad that we could partner with somebody on an additional indoor type facility. No commitments from anybody, no selection, but it provides that opportunity and that option over the next 25 years that we don't not have the space. And if it never materialized, we can figure out later what happens to that. And it's important to note that of the two fields, currently the second one could only be built if we didn't have to extend the stormwater pond. This assumes that we don't extend the stormwater pond. As you'll see at the bottom here, if we have to extend this stormwater pond, we'll cut into the amount of square footage that we have to retain from tree canopy, which makes building the second sports field a little bit more difficult. So that's just something that we're going to have to monitor over time as we build this. But the way it's currently laid out, we look like we can get to the field and that additional space.
As opposed to going down Sumner, have you thought south, like to Holly and the developers that have gone there? I'm sure they're going to be using a lot of these facilities. And so,
Yeah, I was just saying any of those groups or agencies could reach out to us. We're just trying to preserve space.
Okay. But have you, I know you planned it, but has that been in the consideration thus far?
In what way?
In what way have you thought of it?
I know, but I'm trying to get, like, in...
You said you discussed being, being in, like, co-partnership with the city of Sumner. Have you thought about the same thing with Denali? Has that even been considered?
Yeah, we've talked with the county about ways to partner on regional parks.
Okay.
We've talked to their county, their planning staff at the parks.
What about the developers that develop the community?
We have not spoken to Newland Homes, no.
Okay.
We've tried to stay, I guess, governmental agency to governmental agency,
mm-hmm.
knowing that the developer for Newland Homes is kind of...
Don't you think that private donorship is really the only feasible way we would be able to develop any of this stuff?
Yeah.
I don't know yet.
Okay, because we need to be thinking beyond just the municipal and the governmental agencies.
Correct.
You know, exactly, like even approaching some of the tribes around here who've got plenty of money. And they can actually help because, well, we'll get into that a little bit later, but we need to expand that.
Yeah, all funding options are on the table. We hadn't got to the point where we have an adopted plan to be able to talk to groups about that level of financing.
Okay.
Because they're going to want to know, what are you building? At this point, we don't have an adopted plan to say, this is what we're building. I know the Kiwanis has reached out in the past about wanting to build a splash park. I know the Rotary down in Puyallup helped right. with their coverage. So, yeah, all of those things are on the table.
Okay.
But the first part is getting to a plan that you can adopt so then you can have something to talk about.
Okay.
I hope that answers your question.
No, it does. Okay. I appreciate that. Thanks. Councilmember McClain. Councilmember Fullerton. We hadn't heard from you tonight.
Okay. Can we investigate possibly under the community center / senior center doing underground parking so that we can have more parking, and then for the senior center that could, you know, people could have access to elevators and ramps and not have to be outside, but that would free up the outdoor parking for the sports fields when there's something going on.
We can look into that. I will say, getting back to the mayor's comment, that adds a significant cost. Last time I looked at underground structured parking, you're talking $10,000 to $15,000 a stall. So to put the number of parking stalls in here, you're adding a significant cost to the project, but it's something, I guess, if the council wants us to put all underground parking, but then we wouldn't be able to move forward in phases because you'd have to build the senior center and all the underground parking first, which wouldn't kind of not allow us to start moving on some of the initial vaults.
Okay, and Councilmember Roach had a question.
So land use, I'm just wondering, what can you do in your stormwater area? Can we move the dog park and the disc and the dirt bikes all in that area that's there?
So we are using the stormwater pond for up to part of the 18-hole golf course, this golf course, in the dry months. The part of the challenge is the stormwater pond has already been cleared. And when we did the development agreement and the environmental impact statement for the WSU Forest project as a whole, part of that was an agreement, part of the mitigation of that environmental impact statement was that as part of Midtown Park, we would maintain about 22 acres of tree canopy. And so where we put like the dirt bike trails, the disc golf in the ballpark is we're using those areas that we're maintaining as tree canopy because we don't have to clear them to do those facilities. And then taking every other inch that we can clear and putting in the other facilities. So it's kind of a, I guess the way to say it is even if you move the dirt bike course, you still wouldn't have the tree canopy available to remove to put in additional tree cleared areas. So we're trying to play like a Rubik's Cube game, and kind of the direction I gave to the consultants was I want to max out that retention or get it down to where we have to be to meet our environmental mitigation. Mm-hmm. And that is how we landed with being able to get the two ball fields in here if we don't have to extend the stormwater pond.
That's it. So based on the agreements before, I'm skipping ahead to how do you pay for all this stuff. All
right. So I would say, hold on and let me get to the next slide, and you'll kind of see how we're starting to look at this and then kind of what our next
is. Okay, real quick, I don't know what the agreement was, but can you sell off on 214th there to private business and generate revenue to fund the rest of the park?
We can now.
We in theory, we could. We would just have to figure out how we're balancing that canopy coverage. And two, the stormwater pond is mainly what's along 214, mm-hmm. or along South Prairie Road. From basically D over to 214 is all currently owned by Eric Aragon, or Midtown Properties LLC, I should say.
Yeah, right.
And we can always like underground it if we had to, depending on funding. Obviously, more expensive, right? You know, so some of that could be undergrounded. They do that a lot.
If we're underground, doesn't that make our property more valuable as well? But,
yeah, just.
Mm. So, yeah, we'll get into the history. It's a 60-40 basically split that they came up in 2009 where Tarragon owns the 60 acres that you're talking about on 214. We're talking about the 40 acres that we have reserved for parks right there.
If you get pushed back into the dirt bike area and even move the stormwater up and leave that 214th area.
So this is actually 100th. This right here, if you were to be out there, this is that movie.
Right.
Yeah,
I'm talking on the diagonal 214. You can't do it in the stormwater area.
Well, there's no 204th is way over here.
Yeah, that's
South Prairie. Okay, South Prairie, sorry.
This is South Prairie.
Right.
So you could, this pond is already constructed, so I guess, you could do something in that area.
Right.
That would be it. That would,
you move the stormwater out of there as well?
Huh?
You move the stormwater up so you have the other area on the other side of this.
That would cause us to redo all the work that we had Visconti do when they built the Costco. And that actually, that stormwater pond was pretty expensive because it's actually, and probably from, it's actually regulated as a dam because of the amount of water it can hold back. So moving the stormwater pond is easy on paper. Moving the stormwater pond in practicality is extremely expensive because that stormwater pond serves basically Visconti, that whole development, plus where the Trapper Sushi and movie theater is at.
Okay. That stormwater loop extension then is already...
This part has not been developed.
That's what I'm referring to, is that?
Yes. So we could sell it. Right now, under our current development agreement, we're required to allow Tarragon to basically construct part of their stormwater pond there. And that's why we said if it gets built, there's lots of if-then statements. The development agreement with Tarragon expires at the end of this year.
What about Ponderosa and all the Pierce County properties that are across the street from South Prairie? Do they utilize that stormwater as well? Or do
no.
Okay.
There is a little county stormwater pond right here that was done when the South Prairie improvements were done, but this county maintains it and it's not connected to our system.
All right. Oh, let's see. Who do we have first? Councilmember McClymans and then Councilmember Baldwin.
Yeah, so Building 2 up there, did we coordinate with the school district and see if that
area was large enough for the school district's aquatic center.
We made sure it had enough square footage. We did meet with the school district to make sure that both the consultant and I understood their needs, but they can't make a commitment because they've already got an adopted plan and they're working through their process. But it does have the square footage. We made sure that we understood their needs and set that as kind of the goal.
You said needs?
Well, I guess if you look at their proposed aquatic center, how big it is,
right.
What is in it,
right.
How much square footage they would need, I guess that's what I'm saying. It's the
okay, good. Yeah, because they were concerned about having enough square footage to have sanctioned events.
Yeah, we looked at what they were proposing, and I believe, Steve, were you on there?
I was not.
I think Scott was on that call, where we actually talked with the school district and tried to get a better understanding of what an aquatic center looks like. But as I said, because they already have their adopted plan that they're moving forward with, there wasn't any commitments, and they couldn't. But we did want to at least understand what the sizing requirements were.
Okay, and then Councilmember Baldwin, and I believe Councilmember Roach had a question as well.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This all looks so amazing, like just how everything has been put together through all of the different ideas. So, great job. I think the only question that I have, and maybe if you play disc golf, this might be offensive when I ask this, but when I'm looking at kind of all these other areas, I can see, okay, yeah, like a lot of different types of people are going to be able to use that the dog park, except for the disc golf, and I'm looking at just the size of it. And so, yeah, I guess is that going to attract a lot of people? Because I've been to different areas, and I always see just an empty.
From who we've been contacted by, and I will say that one of our highest responses from the survey kind of came from that group. There's a lot of people passionate about it, and we felt like it was a good way of using the tree canopy, right? So there's that area we have to retain as tree canopy. The nice thing about the disc golf is it just went in as a tree canopy.
Yeah.
So it was a low cost way of putting additional improvements in the park.
Yeah.
That took advantage of something else. The same with the dirt, same with the mountain biking trail. Not a lot of clearing in that area.
Right.
So we were able to put an improvement in that provided additional capacity without having to remove basically tree canopy.
Gotcha. Okay.
And Councilmember Roach and then Councilmember Fulton.
Okay, this might be a side conversation. I know we're setting up meetings to meet with you and others for us new guys, but you mentioned something about Tarragon's agreement expiring at the end of the year. So, I'd like to learn more on that. Anyways, what does that mean? Where are we with that? Can we potentially partner with the project we're trying to work on here?
I think that would be a great side conversation because there's lots of
interesting
history. Yeah, lots of history.
All right, Councilmember Pulsion.
Yeah, I do like that you added some sports fields to this. That's great. Appreciate that. I would like to go back up to Allen York Park real quick on Section B. I'm looking at that parking lot there, and I'm seeing, like, we have an existing parking lot that's sitting there at Allen York Park, and it doesn't have trees. We're talking about making that the parking for the boat launch, and I'm concerned by adding trees to a parking lot that is for boats. We're going to end up taking out some trees with those trailers. Those are long trailers. And the parking lot right now as it exists does not have trees there. So why are we adding trees to, I understand like you've got to have like this tree canopy, but like right next door we literally have a forest right there. And it's pretty shaded right there. And I know like California, they went and painted all of their streets white, and that supposedly helped to reflect the heat from the sun from absorbing into the black pavement, so it became white, and that helped supposedly. I don't know, but those are going to have to be very strategically planted trees.
Well, I can say that in the conceptual designs that we previously presented, that parking gets converted back to single vehicle parking to have the parking for fields, that new field right there. So there wouldn't be boat trailer parking in there in the ultimate design. And it gets reconfigured and laid out to maximize it, which means we need to add the trees in. There's also the offset for the trees we'll be removing in Area A to provide better boat trailer parking in Area A.
So we're moving boat launch parking back up to trailer, or up to Section A.
Yes, as the plan evolves over time.
Okay. And we have to remember this is a 25-year plan we're talking about. It's not like we're putting everything in the next 2 years.
Well, hopefully some of these things can get done before I find a gravestone to live on.
We have a great eye on it.
Well, we wouldn't want you living in the gravestone.
Thank you for your time. And
it's all good. These are great questions. And it's better to get clarification at this point in the process than later on. Just jumping ahead, we've got two other concept plans just to walk through. One is Victor Falls Park. This one is very straightforward in that the intended concept plan is to enhance and improve the existing parking lot, pave it, and add improvements for ADA, provide a trail along the north side of the creek with 3 viewing platforms, provide a picnic area, and also some safety improvements along that trail corridor, just so users are protected. So this one is very discreet in its enhancements. The last one, Cedar View, again, a smaller neighborhood park broken up into smaller chunks. So Area A, which is the existing play field, would include a enhanced baseball backstop and regrading, reseeding the play field, a new covered multi-sport court, so basketball and pickleball, and parking along 206. Area B on the north side would have the spray park, restroom building, and parking along 93rd. The central part of the park, Area C, would be an upgraded playground and natural play area, and then Area D would be enhancements to the existing parking, which would be paving that as pull-in parking and then adding 3 additional picnic shelters. Again, the intent of these concepts are to give guidance going forward, but also to start thinking about how to break them up into more digestible chunks. Jason?
And we just kind of wanted to close. This is an update of a slide that we had produced before. One of the big things that we've heard through this process is the need for sports fields and sport-related access throughout the community. So this was kind of a slide that we had prepared, and we've now updated it to kind of show the additional facilities that would be added. So everything that's kind of in a red box on this slide are fields or facilities that are getting added. So you can see all of Midtown Park is getting added, but we end up adding about 6 baseball fields, 3 multi-sports fields, a number of pickleball courts, a couple different basketball courts, both indoor and outdoor. We also have shown the Reed property because we're working with Mount Rainier Football Club to develop that property with different athletic fields to kind of get into the mayor's point about working with private interest. So that would be an example of how we're moving forward with there. So this was just kind of to give a concept overview of all the different, hopefully different sports facilities that would be created as part of this plan. Kind of getting to the overall second part of why we kind of group these projects is we know we're not building this in the next 6 years, the next 10 years. It's a 25-year plan, so yes, it goes all the way out to 2050. And so what our strategy and approach is, and it's kind of, there's a couple of reasons why we've kind of tiled it this way, is we've listed the projects on the left kind of with that different, those nomenclatures, A, B, C, D, and E, and when we would likely build, try to attempt to build those projects out. The reason that you see the Northwest parking lot all the way elevated to 2426 as Leslie and I were doing some research. And there's a grant available currently coming out this year for boating facilities, which includes providing building boat treatment parking. So there's a grant opportunity, so we kind of move that part of Alleyne Park forward by itself so we could try to chase that grant. We'll see what happens there. Then the rest of it really starts to swing over to Midtown Park, and we spend about the next 8 years developing different facilities in Midtown Park. The first one being that first sports field in Midtown Park along with the pickleball. There is a grant for about $1.2 million coming out of RCO this year. Leslie and I are also planning to chase that grant to help fund that, which is why we're trying to get this plan wrapped up so we can say, yes, this is the plan. This is what's been adopted. These are the schedules and why we're moving forward with these grants. We did provide some additional work in Cedar View because we think the backstop in the sports court was a lower-cost pipe project that could provide a lot of benefit to that neighborhood. And at the bottom, you'll see the Reed property. That's not really our construction of the Reed property, but that's our purchasing. This gets weird, and I know there's lots of debates about this, but our purchasing of the property from as a city general government from the water utility so that it can be developed with park facilities at a later date in partnership with MFRC. So I think for us, I think we've heard some great feedback on the parks and the grouping. Is there anything kind of on the project sequencing that's later in the sequencing that you would like to see earlier in the sequencing? Because this will, and then when we get to the next steps, we'll kind of see how this is informing our next kind of step with the city council.
Councilmember McClain.
Yeah, so we missed an opportunity to take a poll in the last election cycle. We could have put a measure on the ballot to inform us, but we weren't ready. So, you know, I mean, it wouldn't have been a very good measure. But can we prepare a few questions for the 2025 race, Bonnie Lake? We'll have people in that race, so the price for putting a few measures on the ballot to get feedback from more than 1,800 people would be a bargain. And specifically, I think I'd like to see a measure that said, would you bond for B&D to pull it from 44 back to 26 or 28?
And how much does that cost to be?
I'd have to defer to city administration on that.
Yeah.
Like $2,500.
I mean, hypothetically, you know. At their
group. Yeah.
Cost to put something on the ballot. Yeah, it seems to be a valid question. Any further commentary before we move on?
Move on to what? I do.
Oh, hey, Councilmember Hubler.
Hi.
Hi. I saw your hand raised.
So some of my concerns in after being out there talking to the public and stuff over the summer and being the planning commission, the playground and break park are almost more important than sports fields are at this point because parents don't have anywhere in our city for their kids to go and play. We have a very, very old park, playground area at Cedar View, and we have a very minuscule park at Alleyne Park. So considering that we need, as a city, to give our families more places to go out and play, so that those of us that have younger kids aren't driving to Holly, which is a little play. So I think that playgrounds and play parks need to come before sport fields and, you know, bike fields and things like that. So those are very important for those younger families.
Oh, I think it's a very valid point, Councilmember Hubler. Thank you. And we can provide feedback for that. Yes,
yeah. I always say we did move up the spray park in Midtown Park to be a 28 project.
Yeah.
The only reason we put the sports field ahead of the spray park at Midtown Park was because of the grant opportunity.
Okay.
There's not an equal grant right now for that, and so we were kind of trying to – the early ones have that early success by chasing grant funds. The reason that the spray park in Cedar View was moved out as far as it was is in order to build the spray park at Cedar View, we need to build the sewer system in the Cedar View neighborhood, or at least part of the trunk line.
And we lost it.
And we lost those funds. And so we've moved it out further to give us time to try to figure out how to deal with the infrastructure question. And then really the one in Allen York, the one in Allen York Park really requires us to have the road reconstruction done first. And so we felt like that was just something that's going to take a little bit more time to come together. And so trying to move that project forward without that other project would just be difficult. So don't disagree with you, Councilmember Huber, but I think that's kind of the, at least the strategy was to try to get the one at Midtown Park at least going here in the next couple of years.
And Commissioner Solem had a comment.
Yeah,
thank you for raising your hand.
During our sensi session during the summer, the Lions Club was very interested in a spray park. And they said apparently there's funding from the national organization to support these things.
Do we have grant opportunities for that? Do you know?
We can look into it.
Okay.
Yeah, and yes, if we could advance a project and get it because we've got grants, we would gladly, or partnerships with private organizations, we would gladly do that. So,
all right.
This was just assuming, not knowing all of the landscape. Does that answer your question?
Councilmember Swatman.
I was interested in what Mr. Roach was thinking over there about funding, and not, I don't know if this is the point that we were talking about that in, because you know some of these grants that we're talking about are minuscule, basically. There's a lot of them out there. There's hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of grants out there. And they're just, that's like a joke. You know, I can write a check today for $100,000 and it will get you nothing. You know, when you're talking about these level of improvements, you're talking about multi-millions of dollars. Many millions.
Yeah, the one.
How are you going to generate that, right, is the question.
Can I go to the next slide? And I think
that's where we'll get your both of those questions.
There you go.
Perfect.
The grant that we're looking at for Midtown Park is $1.2 million.
Mm-hmm.
So that we felt that was a sizable enough. I don't remember what the grant for the boat facility was.
Good luck getting that. What was the grant size we got for the whatever it was? Kind of arguably the $12 million field that we built over there? 300?
350, like I said.
Oh, that's not bad. Right?
We're there. We're going to do our best. And I think the next step kind of gets to that question. We wanted to make sure we had the projects grouped correctly, the timeline generally correct, knowing that there's some things that we might want to advance or not based on funding. The next thing that we're doing that was part of this package is we're going to be coming back, and this is what I promised the council when we did the initial contract, was we're going to bring back the costing and revenue together. And that will allow the council to either kick projects out past that 25-year window if they want. We're working with FCS Group right now to identify, one, what the rate study is for park impact fees, which is a critical component of this, and other revenue sources that are available to the city council. And then the city council can make those choices, and we can run that project. So I guess to get to your question, Councilmember Roach, is we wanted to make sure that we had it grouped right, that we had the projects listed right, that we had the timing right, and then Steve and FCS Group will be coming back to do a presentation about here's the cost, here's the revenue you could get for park impact fees if you set them at different rates, and here are other funding sources that the council could consider. I know at one time the council was considering B&O tax for park improvements.
Mm-hmm.
That's an option that's still on the table. And so there are other funding sources out there. There's grants.
What kind of estimated timeline are we looking at to get the revenue presentation?
It will probably be in the next 30 to 45 days.
Okay.
Because we want to have this adopted by April so that we're available to start chasing grants in the fall.
Okay.
So I hope that answers.
Not really, no.
All right, Councilman.
At least where you're going to get the information.
Oh, okay.
Councilmember McClymont?
So is a bond measure going to be part of that revenue?
It could be.
Do you honestly think that the public is going to vote for any kind of a park bond when they defeated the last one so significantly?
Well, depends on timing and how long ago that was.
No, but you know what? That's a significant data point for us, isn't it?
Right,
that we know that's the biggest poll that you can take and be definitive. No, Bonnie Lake citizens don't want to pay for a $15 million park.
And Commissioner Solem.
If I remember, the people who moved that park line forward couldn't agree on what to build. So it wasn't
specific.
It was a tax forever without buying anything. The solution would be, here's what we're going to build, when we're going to build it, do you want to approve it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. The answer will clearly still be no.
But and what's going to cost? What's the cost of putting down the measure in 2025?
We're already going to have council members on the ballot.
Yeah.
So we have already paid that. What is the fee for putting?
Very little.
Yeah, I think it's like $2,500, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's a cheap poll. How much did our survey cost?
You know, in my opinion, you're asking them again. If they say yes or no, does that mean you're actually going to put it on there? Does, you know, where's the group at that's going to push that forward?
Sure.
And if that's going to be approved, it's going to be X number of years down the road. But,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So, and Commissioner Daniel.
So I think getting back to what we were talking about before, like, there was no plan. And for me, as a citizen, I don't want to just have a blank check saying, I'm not sure what you're going to do. We're here. This is the whole point of the park's plan, is to get a plan and say, hey, this is what we want to do. This is what you've told us you want to do. And if we look back at the slides at the beginning, they are really supportive of this happening. So since they have input, we've kind of all gone through it, and we have a plan saying, hey, this is what we want to pay for. Do you want to pay for it now? It has a lot higher chance of going through than just a blank check thing, and I will do something.
And people's attitudes have changed since COVID, and there's been a whole bunch of global activities that have happened.
And this
might get a little
this
bit.
This whole summer, we've been canvassing people and talking, and there's
it's like right now pushing to eliminate the 1% cap on property taxes. I don't know if you've looked at your property taxes lately, but each one of us probably pays many, many, many thousands of dollars a year in property taxes alone. Concept of somebody else going to wanting to up that tax bill is probably extraordinarily small.
Mm.
If you had a group of people here today that were sitting in the audience with shirts on that say more parks for Bonnie Lakes and they were going to go out there and run with that and try to get it done, you might have something to work with. You had that before. It got soundly defeated by an extraordinarily amount of, like, margin.
And how long ago was that, Councilman?
That was state record, 2013.
2013?
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking 11 years ago? That Councilmember Fullerton.
Wasn't the initiative that got defeated, that was for municipalities, for municipal parks?
Municipal park district,
yeah.
Where a large
right.
portion.
So, but I think if we can come up with a clear value of how much we want to spend on each park, and then we can give them an exact number and even possibly break down how much that would cost in their taxes. How long is this going to last? 25 years from now, this is going to drop off and you're done, or, you know, whatever it may be. It possibly could have a way to pass so we can get to.
And that's hashing out just one revenue source as well.
Yeah, and that's just
oh, Deputy
Mayor Clark.
City Clerk had something to say.
Yes, hopefully.
They can't give an estimate because it's based on how much you're assisting and how many people are in
the Oh, that's lovely.
How much does it typically cost us for an election? Do we know that? I mean, we just had an election.
Between 50 and 100,000, or am I?
It's about 50,000.
Oh.
And quickly, I also want to add that you have the opportunity to do council match funds. This doesn't have to be public approved.
What would
that
entail?
The general thought being is that there's several ways to approach this. It's not just one way that we can do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I would add, the same thing as the election you're talking about is that there was no plan. That was kind of the same reason we decided to table the B&O tax. It was like, hey, we don't really have a plan on what we're doing, and we're going to tax people or business for something, but we're not sure what yet. Once we have a plan, now we're heading at least in the right direction, I think, which mm-hmm. is a positive for us to move forward with.
There were plans before. Clearly, there were many, many plans.
True. A lot of plans.
Very similar to this.
Sure.
They were probably in smaller bindings.
They were, older plans that newer council members didn't necessarily want to go with. Right.
There you go.
Yeah,
and
there you go. Council Member Baldwin?
Well, wasn't it even in the 2013 election that it was voting to basically create a park district, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would vote against that as a Bonnie Lake voter. And so, yeah, I agree with Commissioner Bingham that
All right, I love the robust discussion at 7:16, and Deputy Mayor Carter had a very valid point about the weather that's that we have out there that might be hitting, said about 7 o'clock, so we have to keep in mind that as well. So before we move on, are we ready to move on? I just want to throw that out to the council.
Can I have conversations they want to have, you know, please reach out to me. We are not done. This is just a step in the process, and we'll gladly keep working at it until we come up with, I think, something accountable.
Really? Okay. I believe we are ready now to end the joint city council workshop and planning commission. Oh!
We got
one more item.
One more? I don't have that on my agenda.
We can table that for now.
Yeah. Oh, trying to do this. All right. So we have one more item.
Councilmember Huber.
Oh.
You were with the commission for a long time. And as is traditional, when a commissioner moves on to the city council, we give them a vest for going away with. We will get it to you.
Very nice.
Okay, and apparently I jumped the gun and I don't want to do that again. So, do we have any further business? Planning commission?
Yeah, there's another presentation.
Okay, all right, and what do we have? Okay.
Waiting
for that. Not
quite.
There we go.
It looks like it could be snow.
As long as it doesn't turn to ice. Clear could be worse than white.
Seems kind of anticlimactic.
I think tonight.
Okay. There we go.
Thank you for your patience tonight.
We put you on finance, by the way, since you're gone.
I was told, which I appreciate.
I know that it's been a long night, and we've got less time. This one is kind of deadline sensitive. We have to be done by the end of the year. And we are really behind the eight ball on this project, so we did need to kick off with the city council to make sure that we are at least pointing in the right direction. Lots more to come, but we are wanting to be sure that we're pointing in the right direction, so that we at least start off on a good foot. So we are in the process of updating our comprehensive plan. We're doing the required periodic update. That is required by state law. This is an update that the city is required to do under the Growth Management Act and have completed by December 31st of 2024. We always get the question of why we have to do this. Not doing this makes us not eligible for grants if we're not certified by the Puget Sound Regional Council and updated our comprehensive plan and submitted to Commerce. There's also other sanctions that the governor's office can place on cities who refuse to update their comprehensive plan. So there are financial implications from not updating your comprehensive plan, so it's very important that we do it.
And you said the deadline is the end of the year.
The end of the year.
Okay.
And we're kind of in a very, I don't want to say tough situation, but we have lots of people always outside of the city telling us some things that we have to do. So we've got the Growth Management Act, which is adopted by the state legislature, which has a number of requirements that we have to include in our comprehensive plan. We also have Vision 2050, which is adopted by the Puget Sound Regional Council, which we are part of, but it is a multi-county body that includes countywide planning policies that we have to meet, and also the countywide planning policies that are adopted by the Pierce County Regional Council and also Pierce County, which is why it's important to have people serving on those lines as well, and then our local comprehensive plan. So that's kind of the framework in which we're working under the requirements we need to meet to update our comprehensive plan. The other reason we update the comprehensive plan is because it directs and guides the work that we do as staff over that 10-year that at least that first 10-year horizon and provides kind of our compass of where we should be working and putting our efforts. And how we do capital planning, how we do budget planning, how we do development code writing. The comprehensive plan is kind of our first step. And so kind of getting the council's policy direction built into that along with the community's policy direction is really critical for all the work we're going to do over the next 10 years.
So what are the repercussions for not following elements of the 2050?
So if we don't comply and get certified with the Puget Sound Regional Council, we would not be available for any funding source, any funding that's coming through the Puget Sound Regional Council. Currently, we will receive the $500,000 grant due to the Combined Workforce Transportation Improvement. We would lose that grant. We're also getting a loan through the Water Revolving Fund. I don't know how it happens if we automatically start having compliant comp plans with the Department of Commerce. For any state funding, revolving loans, TIB,
what is TIB?
Transportation Improvement.
Okay.
Board. You have to have comprehensive plan that has basically been approved and is adopted by Department of Commerce and meeting the requirements. Additionally, if you just say we're not going to do it, there are other sanctions that can be placed on cities, which includes taking away the city's portion of the state revenue sharing from like liquor tax, gas tax. Also, it can impact our ability to collect REIT money. So there are real financial implications. And I believe the city of Chelan or the county of Chelan was the last one. They have actually faced sanctions about 20 years ago for refusing to do their comprehensive plan. So there are real financial implications. That being said,
So what I heard, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm just being an active listener here. If there's an element of the 2050 plan that we disagree with, it'll cost us about $500,000.
No, it could cost us significantly more. That was just one grant. So all the grants that we were talking about chasing, all the money we want to chase for road funding, all grants and loans that we would get through the state of Washington would not be available.
So the state of Washington is enforcing the 2050 plan?
They are enforcing our compliance with the growth management.
Yeah, I didn't ask about GMA. I asked about the Puget Sound Regional Council 2050 plan.
The Vision 2050 would be any transportation funding that we get through PSRC. I will say most of the more controversial requirements, in my mind, are coming through the Growth Management Act.
Yes.
Not through the Vision 2050 requirements. Most of the requirements that are coming through Vision 2050, we're feeling pretty good about. I think as we walk through this presentation, you'll see what I mean by. I think when we get to the end of the day, I don't think that PSRC is going to be where most of our tough issues are. I think it's going to be more through the Growth Management side.
Thank you.
Okay.
So what we know as we do this comprehensive plan update is that we're going to continue to grow, we're going to continue to diversify in both our social political identities, language, income levels will continue to increase. Bonnie Lake will continue to grow. The question is how much and where are the key questions, and that's really a policy discussion. We must include options that lead to access to housing, employment, and transportation. And we do know that city government, the community, and the business will need to collaborate around shared values. Yet there are real state requirements. They provide a framework. How we meet those? Two ways. You can go down the path that everybody goes down, or you can get creative and try to figure out how to achieve what the community is wanting in a way that still meets the Growth Management. And that's been our charge. So what we do know is that the comprehensive plan will talk about housing and development. We need to talk about parks, which we were talking about tonight, equity, environment and climate, and transportation and economics. Those are the broad topics that we want to talk, that are going to be discussed in there. And when we talk about equity and comprehensive planning, the vision I want people to have in their mind is it's about access to public infrastructure and improvement. For example, the most simplest one I can use is a crosswalk. When someone walks up to a crosswalk, we design those to be equitably used, which means for people who are blind, there's audio signals saying walk or do not walk. For people who are in wheelchairs or families with strollers, there are curb ramps. And for the blind, that there's little yellow dimples in the curb ramp so that all users can use it. So when we're talking about equity and comprehensive planning, what we're really talking about is how do you design our system so that regardless of your life, you're able to interact with that system.
Yeah, but your equity on your crosswalks has ADA requirements. Those are all obvious. Yeah.
Right, but that's a part of equity. I think that, we just use that as the most kind of classic example because people can wrap their head about.
Yeah, but that's a very objective standard, though, for a sidewalk, an engineering standard, an ADA standard, as opposed to a subjective, like, can you get to work from your house or something?
I don't disagree.
And then parks is a optional thing, right?
Right, but one thing we've learned through our surveys is that parks, trails, and open space, the fact we're doing a plan, are very important to the community.
Really?
Yes, it is an optional element of a comprehensive plan, so we don't have to have a parks element, but we're doing the parks plan anyway, so it's going to be part and parcel, adopted by reference in the comprehensive plan, because it's part of what the community is.
Those other ones are required, though.
Sure. The ones that aren't here that are not required are economics and parks. Those are both optional elements.
Alright.
So we did run a survey between October 13th and January 17th. We pushed it out to social media. We pushed it out to community events. Not meant to be a statistically valid survey. We pushed it out through meeting with different organizations, through Facebook. We put mailers in utility billing. It's not meant to be a statistically valid survey. It's meant to give us the guiding framework, and I think the council will not disagree with the guiding framework that came back with the survey. We asked people what their top three priorities in 25 years would be. I'm not surprised. It would be reducing traffic congestion, which I think is the hardest one for us, because a lot of the traffic congestion we receive is from Tahale, Buckley, unincorporated Pierce County, and our ability to manage that is difficult because we're not the regulating agency.
I don't know. Mr. Johnstone assured me that just synchronizing the stoplights were going to help that traffic.
We had a survey that we did here, you know, and it clearly says that the people said that reducing traffic congestion was their number one priority, right?
Yep.
And yet we just had a park survey that we said the number one was whatever, and we were going to do that number one. But over here, we're going to say that, you know, we're not going to work on.
We're trying to say in the broad frame of comprehensive plan, as you can see, we didn't put parks on there because we were running it on a separate track. Yeah. We were trying to ask people of these issues outside of parks, what are the priorities?
Yeah, but the problem is with the traffic congestion, in my opinion, that the vast majority of people don't understand the concept of that. You know, that's my opinion. Political, you know, you guys are staff. You have to do the stats. But the problem is why you get that out there is because we could do that. We could, you know, eliminate traffic congestion in the city of Bonnie Lake. Easy enough, you know. Well within the power of the legislative branch. Could we do absolutely anything else? Probably not.
Prohibitive, I guess. Is right. Yes, you could, in theory, make 4-10 and 8-lane roads, right? In the city and in that problem.
And the billions all is on it.
I guess for us, it was just, we were trying to figure out what's on people's minds, right? Like, this isn't a policy direction. It's a, what are people concerned about? What are they seeing in their community that as we prepare these plans they want us to focus on?
But how are we going to focus on that, though?
There are ways. Like the way we do all our transportation modeling, the way we lay out our zoning codes. There are things, the way we are actively participating in things. We weren't trying to get into the solutions tonight. We were just trying to say, as we set our true north compass for this update, where are we going to spend the majority of our resources and efforts? It's going to be, how do we look at traffic congestion, single-family neighborhoods, ability to bike and walk that goes right along with what we saw in the trail survey as trails becoming the highest thing. You see the next tier was public transportation, inclusivity, and economic development. And then the bottom tier was environment, affordable housing, and historical preservation. We're going to focus on all of these, but that's what the community is on the top of their mind. If you ask me right now, these are the issues that they're seeing day to day, and we wanted to reflect that. We also asked people to just tell us what Bonnie looks like in 2049. And I'm not seeing a lot of things that are different from what we've heard.
They would like us to have a slower growth rate, have a small town feel. They want some tree protection, less traffic. So these are not meant to be policy, like you say, they're not meant to be, this is the policy. This is meant to say, this is what people, data points, as I think Councilmember McClyman like to say, these are data points of what are on people's mind, and they need to be on staff's mind as we prepare policy, as we do modeling, as we provide policy to the council. We also ask kind of, how do we increase home ownership? Right? What different housing options would you support? And as you can see, single family scored high, and I'm not surprised. But also townhomes and cottages scored came in kind of second and third. So it's in as we set policy, as we look at our zoning, how do we help support development of cottages and townhomes that provide a lower cost point for home ownership?
And comply with growth management.
Right. So we were trying to find out, how do we find those housing types that work for the community, but also meet those state and federal?
We don't know what the scale looks like here, though, so this could be kind of weird.
And it was,
we have, 9,000 people staying single family and 12.
And the reason we didn't put the percentages on is because they won't add up to 100%, because you could select all or one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So one person could have selected yes for everyone, or they could have selected one. So once again, we're trying. That's why I said it's not a statistically valid survey. It is what are the trends we are seeing? It's a trend line. The trend lines are not far from what we expected, which is good. It was a way to kind of test some theories we had. And the same with transportation improvements, sidewalks, crosswalks. As Steve was saying, we're seeing a lot of correlation between what we're hearing in the trails of wanting people to walk and wanting people to have ability to walk. We're seeing the same thing here, that trails, walking, improving signals are kind of on the top of people's minds as we talked about transportation outside of fixing the traffic congestion. This was the one that we were most interested to see what would happen. And no, we didn't give you percentages because once again, we're just looking at order of magnitude. We asked people where they would support residential development in the city. And overwhelmingly, they've picked Area E and Area C, which is the Scott Island neighborhood, and Area B, which is kind of the downtown.
Or is all of that south of 410? Area B.
Area B is north of 410.
Okay.
We think that C and B kind of got some double votes because the downtown splits both sides of 410. So one thing, if we could have done it better, we would have split that area out a little bit better. But we also can see that people really are trying to limit the future growth in areas A and D. Once again, trend lines, what's on people's mind, what are the public telling us? So that's how we're going into this next part of the presentation, understanding what people are saying, from what they want, slow growth, less traffic congestion, and also our requirements under the Growth Management Act and the Peters Town Regional Council. And I will say this, Councilmember Climans, one of the things I think that's different between the Growth Management Act and Vision 2050 is, for us, at least here in the city, Vision 2050 actually expects the city of Bonny Lake to slow its growth rate. The Puget Sound Regional Council stance is that the higher density housing, the real large population increases should occur around heavy rail, light rail, or bus BRT, not just out in every city. The Growth Management Act looks at Seattle, Buckley, Wilkinson, and Bonny Lake identically. There are no differentiation in those sizes of communities. So that's what I said. I think the Puget Sound Regional Council policies are a little bit more in line with how we see the growth going, and then trying to fit in with some of the requirements that we have from the Department of Commerce. So with that being said, and then I will wrap it up, and this, I think, is the part where we need some feedback from the council on the end. Let me get to the last slide, because I know this is about to be controversial, so let me get to the last slide, and then I will take everything and just give me some direction. So both the Puget Sound Regional Council sets growth targets for the city, and so now does the Department of Commerce. The Puget Sound Regional Council treats their growth targets for our geography as a ceiling that we should not grow above. The Department of Commerce treats it as a capacity number that we have to have a minimum number of. So they're a little bit different in their application. We have to be able to show consistency with both. So the growth targets that Puget Sound Regional Council established are based on what they call regional geographies. And it divides up the Puget Sound region into a number of different geographies, from metropolitan cities all the way down to cities and towns and the urban unincorporated. We are in the cities and towns category. Under the regional growth strategy, we are to take less growth over time and have that growth occur in the metropolitan cities, high-capacity transit communities, and core cities. For example, the city of Sumner, while they are currently have a lower population than the city of Bonnie Lake, is required to take significantly more population growth than we are because of the light rail station.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a, whether we agree with it or don't agree with it, that's the thought process behind the regional growth strategy. So that was negotiated 2 years ago when Vision 2050 was adopted.
Mm-hmm.
The Puget Sound Regional Council didn't set a target specifically for the city. It set a target for all the cities and towns in Pierce County. Pierce County, in consultation with the city staff, worked on targets for each of the cities and towns in Pierce County, which include Bonnie Lake, Buckley, Wilkinson, South Prairie, Edgewood, and I might miss one, but those were the main ones. Everybody else had their own categories, and they were working through it. So that came through Pierce County in negotiation with the city. The Department of Commerce, due to some legislation change 2 years ago, for the first time established housing targets for the city. In the past, targets were based on total number of housing units. You need to have 1,500 housing units. You need to have 30,000 housing units. It didn't look at how affordable or what those housing units cost. Due to changes in state law, the state legislature empowered Commerce to establish housing targets for us based on income band. So you have to have enough housing affordable to these different income bands, as they list here, 0 to 30, and PSA is just permanent supportive housing, 0 to 30, non-permanent supportive housing, 30 to 50, 50 to 80, 80 to 120, and 120 and above. So we have to show that we have capacity for all of those different housing types. And as you can see, as you move down the affordability index, it moves from single family to higher density. So that is the requirement in the state. The state took our population number and our housing target and assigned us income banding based on those targets. So here is the way it works with just the overall targets. And the reason that we didn't put population all the way out is because that just kind of runs with housing, and there's not really a development regulation tied to population, but there are to jobs and housing units. So our 2044 growth target, and that's where we'll measure compliance, is 1,450 housing units. However, that was based on the number of housing units and our projected growth in 2020. So any growth that occurred between 2020 and 2023 is subtracted from that 1,450 housing units, because the base year of that is 2020. We had about 682 housing units. We have 7,680 housing unit target left between now and 44. 2049, because we're rolling the comp plan out, we straight-lined it. So our order of compliance is 44. Based on our pipeline capacity, we have 828 housing units, 846 in zone capacity, giving us a negative number of 998, which means we have excess capacity of about 1,000. On jobs, we have about excess capacity of 1,100, which means we have more capacity in the city than we need to meet our housing targets. This becomes a point at which the council can make legislative decisions. We're planning all of our road planning, street planning, sewer planning, parks planning is based on achieving our targets. So the higher you are above the targets, there's more capacity, there's more housing and development that could occur above your target, creating problems between what you're planning for building and what actually occurs. So there is the ability for the council to have some legislative change in that area to kind of deal with how we deal with that excess capacity. Do we increase it? Do we lower it? That is some legislative decisions the council gets to make.
So the last two slides were a bit confusing, to be honest.
Okay, so where are we going to go back to?
This first of all, it's I have my contact lenses in, and I can't see most of those words.
That's
the first thing. But secondly, I am looking at this like chart on the right-hand side, attempting to understand it, and I just can't. I have looked at it, and look, I don't know what
data
is displaying.
So what it's displaying, this is from the Department of Commerce's website.
Okay.
And statewide, in the next 20 years, the state needs to add 1.1 million homes over the next 20 years.
Okay.
Across the
I understand
state.
That.
Across the state.
Okay.
In the colored bars above
uh-huh.
are the number of housing units we have to add that are affordable to those different areas.
Okay, so statewide, you have to add 310,000 single-family homes.
Yes.
You have to add 200.
Well, no, we have to add 310,000 homes that are affordable to those making 120% of the area median income.
To be able to afford a single-family home.
That's how they're saying, that's their proxy for determining capacity.
Okay.
That most people who are making 120% of the area median income can buy single-family homes. Below that, it gets harder.
Okay.
So the next bracket is those making between, kind of in the orange-brown, is those making between 50 and 120% of the area median
okay.
income.
Yes,
and that's where they start talking about that middle housing, the multiplexes, being affordable to that.
Is that why those pictures are above it? Because
yes.
that's what they can afford?
As a proxy.
Okay.
Right? Like, if you go down to downtown Seattle, condo is significantly more expensive than
right.
a condo. Once again, they're trying to establish ways for us to demonstrate compliance.
Okay.
And that is the proxy that they are using.
But then the next slide, you say, for housing units, this is just for Bonnie Lake. Is that what you're...
This is just Bonnie Lake.
Okay. But in the 2044 growth target where you have 1,450 units, you're saying we have to meet that... That number, isn't that enough counting from now until 2044, correct?
Correct.
But aren't we already adding that with Tarragon alone?
So, Tarragon is 682 housing units.
So then even subtract, but that would count towards that number.
That's in the pipeline capacity. Per the current development agreement, the limit was 670-ish. I used to have it memorized, and I apologize, I don't have the exact point. But that is considered in that pipeline capacity. Under the current development agreement. So pipeline capacity is all the projects that we currently have in permitting that have not yet been built.
Right, and that's why how you're equating these negative numbers at the end.
Correct. Okay. So the target is what we have to meet. The 2023 is growth that has already occurred, right?
Mm-hmm.
So units that we built between 2020 and 2023 that were not in existence when we set the target back in 2020. That leaves your remaining target of 768 housing units between today and 2044. We have 828 in pipeline capacity, which would include the Tarragon project and other developments that we have in the city. We have a zone capacity for 846 additional housing units plus the ADUs, which means that we have excess capacity of about 1,000 housing units overall. So that's what I'm saying. So from a PSRC type standpoint, we're meeting their requirements.
Okay. Now, before we move on, can you share with us how many Bonnie Lake representatives are on the Puget Sound Regional Council?
So the way the Puget Sound Regional Council works is it elects the representative that serves Pierce County through the Pierce County Regional Council. So there's one rep that represents the cities and towns in Pierce County, and I believe currently that person that was chosen by the people who serve on PCRC, which I think was Justin Evans and Councilmember Fulton.
And now,
Councilmember
Roach and with an alternate, Councilmember Hoover.
Yes, they're on the Pierce County Regional Council.
Pierce County,
yeah.
Right, yeah, and I'm talking about the Puget Sound.
And they select the representative that goes up to the Puget Sound Regional Council.
Okay, so my question is, do we have anybody that was Councilmember Evans when he was there, was he on Puget Sound Regional Council?
He was initially. He did it when we did in 2015 when we did the comprehensive plan update.
What about in the 2020s to 2023? Have we had any representation?
Well, it depends. There was no one from the city that was. Let me take a step back. There was no one from the city that chose to throw their name in the hat
mm-hmm.
at the Pierce County.
Well, I'm not asking the reason. I'm asking the number.
So
how many do we have?
One.
And who is that?
Myself.
And on the Puget Sound Regional
Committee. I serve on the Puget Sound Regional Staff Committee. I'm the co-chair of the Puget Sound Regional Staff.
Okay. And so that's what I want. Yeah.
We don't have any elected officials up there, but I am active in that organization and am one of the co-chairs of the Regional Staff Committee. So that's all the planning directors and planning officials throughout the region.
Okay.
So we do have representation, just not on the elected side.
Okay. Yeah, and that's what I wanted to know.
I appreciate it. I didn't understand.
Yes, sir.
So does the county have a representative that is on it, Pierce County?
They have a representative. They get to send directly, and I believe it's Bruce Danmeyer as the executive.
Okay.
And then the county can also send a representative from the county council to the Growth Management Policy Board, and then they have a staff planner that can be on it. And right now that chair is empty. The staff people that are serving up there are myself, Tiffany Sanders from Lakewood, and then Kendall Walls from Puyallup.
Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And just so everybody understands, the Puget Sound Regional Council typically has gone King County's way, right? So Pierce County does have representation, but it is small. And so Pierce County typically gets run over, as does Bonnie Lake.
Yeah, I have.
Smaller than Pierce County. So.
And the reason why I have a particular Dan, I'm sorry to talk over, but flashbacks of the FEMA conference that I went to back in May is coming in, and so I'm suffering a little bit of PTSD because of that. But what you mentioned is a very valid point in the fact that Bonnie Lake and Wilkeson and Prairie Ridge were all considered the same on this council.
Yep.
And in other words, we're thought of kind of as an afterthought.
Well, they get to it's the same where like in King County too. The smaller there's so many seats that get sent up. Like the county gets a seat, Tacoma gets a seat.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a seat for the large cities. So the large cities like Puyallup, University Place, they select a representative to send up there.
Right.
And then a representative is sent up from the small cities and towns group. And for about 4 years, that was Councilmember Evans, representing both Bonnie Lake, but also all the small towns and cities in Pierce County.
And the not to belabor the point, because and I've been doing this for the past 2 years, but the thing about it is that people are assuming that we are a city of 20,000 when we're more than that. We're significantly more than that now. We're well on the way to becoming over 25,000, and we're well on the way to getting to that 30,000 mark to where we're going to be put into a different category as far as what they consider. But right now, we're not.
I don't think we'll ever move out of our category under the current strategy.
And
the reason is because to move out of the cities and towns category, the one thing that we're going to have population. It's a train.
Mm-hmm.
We will have to have either BRT, light rail, or heavy rail to move up because that's the next. That's their, as I said, PSRC's driving issue. They kind of how they differentiate in this population.
And that is theoretical, but that's not what's happening. People are moving up here without the light rail.
I'm just explaining how the governmental structure is set up.
So what do we do about getting them to recognize that? That people are moving up here without us having public transportation.
I think the way that they're recognizing it is their policy direction to us is we need to slow our growth rate and push that growth.
So we're telling people not to buy here because we have to slow our growth rate? That's a little that's not realistic.
Well, no, it's
a good point.
It's possible.
It's like, I'm sorry, I can't sell you this house because regional tent council says we have to slow our growth rate.
No, it's more of how we set up our zoning structure and how we set up. So, for example, do we zone all of our single family zones to 12 units per acre?
Mm-hmm.
Or do we keep it at 4 to 5? Or do we lower it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's going to affect your growth rate, not whether someone's selling or buying a house. It's. Does the council as a legislative body want to say all single-family residential zones disappear and they're all multifamily zones, and so we want 20 units per acre?
And we're talking about just in the Bonnie Lake city limits. And do we not have a lot of unincorporated Pierce County basically within Bonnie Lake city limits?
No, there's no unincorporated.
I mean, the way that our city limits look is kind of like gerrymandering. You can go block to block, and we can be...
Kelly Farms is not. Right. Pierce County.
Yeah, no, Kelly Farms is not.
Yeah.
My point being that as a legislative body here, say hypothetically that the county is, or that the city council is looking to annex some of these properties to bring in, like, Rhodey Park, which I don't think is in our city limits.
Yeah, that's correct.
And how many people live in Rhodey Park?
575.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then we have over there by 320th, like Liberty Ridge is not within the city limits. However, it's kind of thought of as Bonnie Lake, and whatever may happen in the future, we may legislatively increase our population significantly.
And those are two, I guess, those are two different dynamics of how we look at population.
Mm-hmm.
Increasing population of the people that are already here in the city limits versus new development on existing property. So those are kind of two different analyses. And we also have to look at what's urban and rural. So like Liberty Ridge, Prairie Ridge, those areas can never be annexed into the city because they're unincorporated rural Pierce County. Why Pierce County did that, I cannot answer, but we can't annex it. The Thumb, we can't annex.
And can you show me that statute?
Yes, the growth management. You can only annex property within the urban growth area.
I don't have the exact.
No, I'm not asking you a specific site. I mean, later on, can you send me what you're referring to? Send it to me by email.
Yeah, there's a specific statute that says in order to annex areas, it has to be in the urban growth area.
Okay, and that's what I'm asking.
Yeah, and we cannot establish the urban growth area. The urban growth area has to be established by Pierce County.
Okay.
Which is like the Thumb, we can't annex because it's actually rural agricultural resource lands.
See, that kind of steers my conversations with Mr. Dammeyer when we talk about this sort of thing, because we have. And I was just wondering, what I'm limited with and what I can speak with them about.
Yeah, so one of the things we're working, and I will gladly send you that ordinance,
Can I say something? I really feel like we need to move on. This feels like a separate conversation that should be had. It is 7:52.
No, I do agree with Councilmember Paul, and we can table this for a different conversation.
Mayor,
how much more of the presentation?
And the last one is what I really need.
And I was just going to do the statute. RCW 35A 14005, no code city located in the county in which urban growth areas have been designated under RCW 3670A110, that's in the GMA, may annex territory beyond an urban growth area.
Oh, right. Thank you, Ms. Robinson. Okay, you're relieved of that duty.
Didn't have that code citation memorized, so thank you.
Okay, let's move on.
So this, I think, is the one where we're going to have the most issue, and that is the growth targets by income band.
Okay.
And that's why I'm saying, let me get to this, because I think this is where we have the biggest challenge. So they took our 1,400 housing units that we have to add and broke it down by income band. So we have to show, when we adopt our comprehensive plan, that we have capacity for 456 housing units that are affordable to those making less than 50% of the area median income, and in Pierce County that is about $67,000, $68,000, and we have to have about 253 housing units for that, that's considered permanent supportive housing for those making 0-300%. We do not have to build them. We have to show that we have the zoned capacity using their proxy of density. There's a couple ways we can do that. As you can see from this, when we take our current zoning capacity, our pipeline projects, we have more than enough capacity above 50% AMI in all the categories.
Okay.
One nice thing about the View by Vintage was it was built after 2020, and all those units are 60% in AMI or less, so that meets our requirement for the 50 to 80% AMI. So that's why we're really looking at the 50% or less area median income. So it's not just building apartments at market rate, because those aren't affordable to 0-30%.
Yeah.
Right? I looked at rents in Bonnie Lake. They are currently more than my mortgage. So,
oh, yeah.
Market rate apartments don't necessarily just solve the problem. This is, I think,
after Councilmember Roach has a question.
Oh, well, you have to answer that. But the, you just said the 0 to 30% we don't need to worry about because they're already
being. No, the 50 to 80.
Okay. Here's my question on the 0 to 30. Yeah, how do you get there? I mean, that's that just Section 8?
There's a lot of different strategies.
Or middle-income housing?
Middle-income. Well, when you get down to this level, you're really talking about other strategies.
Okay.
And that's what I was saying is, on the next slide, I'll kind of get to those kind of two ways you can do it. And I just wanted to kind of give the council kind of how we're approaching this problem to see how the council wants us to look at it. Okay. So as part of our comprehensive plan, we're going to be looking at three alternatives that are going to inform our environmental impact statement analysis, and also kind of the future land use map and zoning map that we bring back to the council at the end of the year. Many more conversations to have here. These are, if you went bowling, these are our sideboards that we're going to be using. So if you don't like the sideboards, please let me know tonight, because this is going to set what we do.
We don't get into gutter, okay?
Not that you're happy about it, but these are the sideboards, and we can be anywhere between these sideboards. So the no-action alternative we always have, which is just our current zoning, we know it doesn't work because it provides insufficient capacity for the income band, so we know we have to have an alternative. We've developed two alternatives. One of them is stay the course. And that, under that alternative, we would implement all the upzones that are currently envisioned in the currently adopted Bonnie Lake Comprehensive Plan. There was a number of upzones that were advocated for back in 2015 that we placed in the Comprehensive Plan that have not been acted. We would just enact all of those. It would provide significantly more capacity than we need, which creates this problem from streets and planning and other capital improvement planning items. And I think it's inconsistent with those roadmaps that we are getting from the survey. It would likely provide sufficient capacity for income bands because we could show we have capacity in those higher density categories. Not guaranteed that we would get the units, which creates problems in the future. Because in 10 years, we're going to have to do this again. And if we all that area we zoned for high density housing got built with market rate housing, we would still have the same income band, and it would get the areas that we would have to work with become narrower and narrower. Alternative two is working within the Puget Sound Regional's concept of bending the trend to slow the overall growth rate of the city to a slower rate. Under that, we would do some targeted down zone to reduce our overall capacity, because that's a way we can address transportation and some of those guiding principles that we saw from the community with slower growth, small community, keeping neighborhoods close. We would focus that growth in the downtown center, which is a countywide growth center, the prime area for that, in which we have to have these conversations with council that we'd be evaluating, is the old, all the property that the city bought over here for a future city hall building. There's an option there to be able to provide housing on that, which is closer to transit in the downtown center, and work with a private developer to be able to
residential on top and perhaps businesses on the bottom.
Correct.
Okay.
And also looking at how we develop housing in Midtown. Under bend the trend, we would reduce the allowed maximum density in our higher density zones like R3, downtown commercial, downtown mixed use, but we would inject a density bonus if you provide housing that's affordable in those affordable housing groups. So to get to the higher density, you would have to show that you're providing at a certain ratio, 1-2, 2-1, specifics are still being worked out.
So like what they did in Salishan.
I,
on 38th and Portland Avenue.
No, I think that was all Section 8 housing.
Are you sure?
I'm not 100% sure. I could look into it.
You like it's mixed.
It could be mixed. But, yeah, some sort of a – if you would guarantee to build a mixed income housing project, we would give you more density to offset that cost. The nice thing about the upside about that is – we would limit those density bonuses until we hit our targets that the Department of Commerce has set. So once we get to X number of units, we can remove those density bonuses because we've met our requirements in the Growth Management Act.
So are we saying we can allow businesses to add up so that they could put like an apartment complex on top of a
Yes, or if you're in a zone that allows, say, 12 units per acre, we'll let you go to 24 units per acre in the downtown and midtown area, provided that you're providing that housing that's affordable to those lower income groups.
But if you're building in today's dollar, there's no way that you can provide affordable housing because it's going to cost you $1 million just to build a house right now.
Well, that's why most of these would not be in the single-family homes. They would be in those. I think that these are the strategies.
Yeah.
Either we can just upzone everything and say we got more than enough capacity and we hope it works, or we could do targeted area selection where we're going to drive that market and allow for that to force that housing to be constructed.
Remind me again what the PSH stands for again. That was the zero.
Permanent Supportive Housing.
Is that Section 8?
Not necessarily.
But it is subsidized housing.
Yeah. It's subsidized by some groups. So what's included in...
I'm trying to call it what it is.
Yeah, well, what's included in Permanent Supportive Housing is people who run housing for abused women.
Gotcha, okay.
When they want to flee, they'll have a house that organization runs that they can put up. Women fleeing abuse, disabled vets who they're trying to transition back,
they're
dealing with PTSD. So it's not
any option.
Yeah, it's not. That's like you said.
Foster families,
or families facing homelessness. There are all these different advocacy groups that they basically build what they call supportive housing to help people transition from edge of homelessness or domestic violence or other things back into normal housing. That's what they call. Why they call it supportive housing. It's not just Section 8. That's why I'm saying it's...
Yeah.
It's subsidized, yeah. It has to be subsidized.
It's subsidized, but it's not just for low income. It could be disabled vets.
Sure, yeah.
They all have their different little kind of groups that they're trying to help provide housing for, so it fluctuates. And then we would also, like I said, by under the bend the trend, it would look to ensure that we don't use up capacity without having those housing units. So those are the kind of the sideboards we're looking at.
How's that a sideboard, though? It's kind of like, you want to cut off your hand or do you want to keep your fingers?
I'm not saying they're good sideboards. I'm just saying they're the sideboards that we have to work with.
It's a non-choice and a choice, right? You know, who in the world is going to say, okay, hands for alternative number one? It's like, what? No, okay.
But I do have...
Next.
Good idea.
Let's do it.
Under the environmental impact study, I have to study the alternatives.
Well, I like, you know, no action alternative over there, but
we can't do that.
It was an alternative.
Yeah.
We couldn't do it.
So, Mr. Sheldon,
we can do it, but there are repercussions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What, since we have the deadline at the end of the year, what are you asking of the council?
Are these broad enough, not that you like them, not that it answers all the questions, but are they the broad enough sideboards, I guess, lose your arm, cut your finger?
What's wrong with two?
You mean number one?
Okay, which one, two?
Alternative one or alternative?
Are you asking for a decision tonight?
No, I'm just asking for, like, are we missing any?
Okay.
Not a decision, just like...
Everything. Like,
no,
we're complying. Yeah. We're all...
All right, Councilmember Brooks.
I haven't had
the budget discussion yet, so I don't know, but I know, like, at the county, with Planning and Land Services, when they were doing tons of stuff, they're bringing in all kinds of revenue, which is balancing the entire budget. And then likewise, when they weren't, it really hurt. So I don't know how the city's set up, but are we set up that way? Are we taking dollars from, you know, collecting all those fees and everything and putting it in the general fund? And if we slow growth, does that hurt our budget?
Ms. Ryerson, are you still with us?
I would say we're working.
Okay.
I'll let the CFO go first.
I was going to say, thank you for trying to answer just as well as I can. So I look at the budget every 2 years, and I work closely with the director. And yes, the money does go to the general fund, but no, we're not built to run our budget specifically off of the plan
and
fees.
And this year is a budget year, yes?
Correct.
Okay.
And I would say one thing that those fees take into account are both residential and non-residential development. So one of our big focus and kind of pivots, and I've been working on this for a couple of years, is pivoting to more commercial development. So you're adding development that also adds revenue more than it demands service. So as you add industrial parks, you're adding property taxes, different taxes from development, from operation of the economy, and the services those facilities demand from a governmental service standpoint, police services, planning services, code enforcement services, is typically lower than if you're building single-family neighborhoods from an economic standpoint. So it's part of what we're trying to do is, and that's why we developed Easttown as the way we're doing, is trying to close, kind of move our portfolio of development toward more of that commercial, industrial creation. Also as a way of trying to deal with traffic congestion, because if we can put jobs out here, hopefully people will drive less. On 410, they can just go here locally. So that's, does that answer your question, kind of how we're trying to balance the both of them?
Mm-hmm. How does developing the industrial area help with the growth management that we're having to provide housing? And then we're taking property from what could have been more housing that wouldn't have been like downtown Bonnie Lake, but we're adding structures, businesses, so yeah, income, I guess, for people who want to drive to work in Bonnie Lake, but how does that take away from the property that we have left? We have very little property left, actually, to develop homes, and how are we supposed to keep up with their growth management if we don't even have property left to put houses on?
That's what I'm saying. I think in our case, the policies that are coming from the Puget Sound Regional Council are more in line with, I think, what the council is looking at long term. I think building, you know, building houses out in East Town right now is kind of, we're moving in a direction to build the industrial. But I think that would have added more traffic congestion because you have all those residents now trying to get out to East Town versus reverse commuting. People leaving East Town at night, where 410 is a lot more open than it is in the morning, right? So that's part of the strategies. And going back to Councilmember Watson's question, is how you deal with traffic congestion, is how you also kind of lay out. And so we're trying to balance those two things. But adding that out there, it's already built into the analysis. Not to say we can't pull on that land for different things, but right now that's where we're focused on spending, someone spending significant money to construct a lot of different job tech creating businesses out there that will hopefully employ my neighbor.
And we need to send out a message to all of the businesses, especially whoever owns all of the little, you know, strip mall areas. Hey, if you want to build up, we're going to give you a discount so we can.
And there are some strategies.
And then give them a job underneath so they just have to walk downstairs and we'll give you even a bigger discount because you're not requiring parking space.
And Ms. Silverman, do we have one more slide? And
I'm done.
Okay.
I think I've got enough.
All right, Councilmember.
Please, start working in a direction.
I have one observation about the classification of the city because we don't have a train and our public transportation. If we're going to bend the trend, it makes sense we bend the trend so that the people who need public transportation are close to public transportation. That would be where we're sitting right now, right? Mm-hmm. We don't have public transportation past Wendy's,
yeah.
Right? So if we tried to spread low-income housing out through the whole city, we're kidding ourselves, right? We're not helping anybody. If we really want to help and solve a problem of providing housing that's useful, it's useful when they can walk across the street, jump on the bus, and take the train somewhere, right? It's not useful except if they're close to the new development, economic development out in East Town. But we've already built that up for the most part out there, right? I look
at apartment complexes here or businesses with apartment complexes, which is kind of what we had discussed last year before last when we had our retreat, was making it like business area right here with a park in the middle and parking around the outside and then building up so that people can live.
Right. I mean, we would we don't need to do anything except change the zoning to say this is possible. And then ideally, if we really care and want to be effective, we would recruit private people to help us build it. Right? But
all right. And in moving this along, we do have another whole issue that we need to discuss. So do we have any other questions or discussions for the Planning Commission before we excuse them? I'm going to take that silence as a no. And so we will now end the joint City Council Workshop Planning Commission meeting and continue on with the regular Council Workshop. Thank you very much, Commissioners, for being here.
For your time.
Yes. And be very careful getting home. I'm hoping that there's whether people are wrong. All right, we can have a review of council minutes. Council Member Fullerton, why don't you?
I had a few changes, and I believe those were made. I sent it.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
I forwarded my comments to Candace and Deputy Mayor Carter.
Yeah. If anybody else wants to, they're welcome to, but if not, I can keep doing it. Right. Yeah, just keep sending them to me, I guess.
All right, so let's move on to Council Open Discussion. Do we have any open discussion right now, Councilmember Clements?
Just super duper quick. 2 years is going to be the 200th anniversary of the Constitution. I think it's an opportunity Indeed. For us to begin planning some milestones, maybe some of our projects to coincide with that. It'd be nice to see some energy behind recognizing our veterans. We owe them a great debt. That's a perfect time to do that. So there's that. The other thing is I had a chance to attend a workshop on human trafficking. I have some material here from the people who did that. It was excellent. These are real tools for people.
I would love to have
that. That are caught in that, right? And it happens
a lot closer than we think.
It's here. It's here. You probably see people in the stores that are victims. Those things, and then the other thing is there was a training that I was I happened to take on self-governance that I thought was really effective, and I was thinking about perhaps trying to see if we can maybe get our retreat and part of that training, like a two-hour brief from the facilitator on self-governance and what that looks like.
Yeah, those are points very well taken.
Yes, Madam Clerk.
Good. Is that like constitutional the same training
as what you're talking about?
Governance or?
Okay. I'll send you what I took that I thought was really fairly simple and effective.
Yeah. All right. I'm sorry. Any further commentary before we move to Mr. Sullivan again?
Yeah, not that bad.
Mm-hmm. Any further open discussion? We have one more presentation from Mr. Sullivan, who's had a very busy night tonight.
Yeah, I've got something.
It's actually
okay. Yeah, Councilmember Fullerton.
I know this is not my favorite subject to talk about. I know that former council member Evans had brought up at one of our public safety meetings and then also at a workshop about the fireworks. So my comment to him was he wanted to ban the fireworks in Bonnie Lake, and I said, well, put it on the ballot because I don't want to – I'm not banning fireworks. And then he brought it up again, and he did state that if we didn't put it on the ballot, he was going to come back and haunt us. And then we did get a comment from the public last week on fireworks that was sent in an email form. So I don't know if we want to discuss possibly putting it on a ballot at some point, or if we want to put it on 2025, but I believe if we do that, it would have to, we'd have to start the process possibly in February. And I'd also like to get the opinion of our police chief as well as our fire chief and see what their thoughts are, you know, rather than just kind of go willy-nilly, hey, we're just going to throw this stuff out there because, you know, we think firework bad. But because honestly, I love the fireworks. It's beautiful, and it is patriotic, and it's,
that's quite true.
And it's only certain days of the year, so I just, I love it. But
well, I do
want to honor former member or former council member Evans' request to consider putting it on the ballot or have a discussion at some point, and then also the citizen that wrote in. About having PTSD, essentially, from the fireworks.
Well, we need to address it because Councilmember Evans is going to haunt us anyway, no matter what we do.
So, anyway, I'm just putting it out there on the table and just throw that to the wind. That's all I've got.
Okay, any further discussion before we move on? Okay, seeing no other open discussion, we will hand the floor. No, that has been stricken. Thank you, Deputy Mayor Carter. And we have one presentation with discussion on the coordination of cooperative wastewater services from Mr. Sullivan again. Madam Clerk.
Oh, it's for me. This is it's Mr. Johnstone.
It's just here.
Mr. Johnstone. It is not Mr. Sullivan.
Okay, Mr. Johnstone.
All right, I will make this as quick as possible. I know it's been a long evening, and this has also been in front of you a few times now, but I did want to, before hopefully getting to a place where we can reach an authorization for the mayor to sign next week, I did want to give everybody a base understanding here of the history behind this. As at this point in time, we're talking about nearly 50 years of history centered around the handling and treatment of wastewater for the city of Bonnie Lake. So with that, I'm going to move on. I will tell you that some of these slides are kind of wordy. I'm going to do my best to just like bang through them really quick and hit the high points. I'm happy to send this to you, or it will be, we can make it available to you if you want to look at it more. So anyways, in order to get started, we're going to jump back to the year 1975. I was 2 years old, and during that time, Bonnie Lake, Pierce County, and Southville Sewer District executed an interlocal to develop a facilities plan that would outline how to meet their regional wastewater goals. They received federal and state funds to get this plan done, and off they went. In 1977, that plan was completed. Some interesting subject matter in there is that they picked a site for construction of a regional wastewater treatment facility that would discharge into the Puyallup River. That plan was actually approved by the County Board of Commissioners and the EPA in later in that year. During the same time, the city started working on the construction of its sewer system, collection system infrastructure. And additional grant funds were obtained to construct that. However, we hit a little bit of a snag when the County Planning Commission denied an unclassified use permit for the proposed wastewater treatment facility that was to be built down in the Alderton area, and the project started to skid to a stop. In response to that, in 1979, that facility plan, that was completed 2 years earlier, was amended to include Addendum 3, and the highlight of that is that this is where the decision was made that conveyance of the city's wastewater, City of Bonnie Lake, would go to the Sumner Wastewater Treatment Facility. In addition to that, it would also include what was recommended was construction of the gravity transmission main that extends between the two cities. This was approved by the County Board of Commissioners and the EPA in 1979. Following year, Bonnie Lake, Sumner, Pierce County, and the Southville Sewer District executed an additional ILA, which would provide for the design, construction, and operation of the expanded plant. So obviously the plant in Sumner needed to get bigger in order to treat that extra wastewater. So that was the direction here in 1980. However, later in that year, the EPA and Ecology changed their grant requirements to require a larger local match. And because of that, Pierce County withdrew its participation from the project. They were a key member of the team at that time. And so that created an issue. What that prompted was the city to start a planning effort locally to figure out what are other ways that we can handle our and dispose of our own wastewater. So that went back to constructing a small independent facility that would serve the city only. It was no longer a regional facility. The idea is just one plant to serve Bonnie Lake. There was a local improvement district proposed to finance the construction effort. That was rejected by voters in 1983, effectively killing that alternative. During the same time, there was a recall campaign. The mayor was recalled. Most of the council quit. And so the new mayor and city council announced new plans that abandoned the efforts of developing the sewer system. At this point, the federal government said, we gave you money to build something. Why aren't you giving us what you said you were going to build? We want our money back. This was obviously a huge problem. The city appealed EPA's decision. In turn, also the city and South Hill Sewer District filed suit against the county. There was settlement discussions. Sorry, I'm just moving quickly through this. And then finally, what was the decision that was made after all of the legal wrangling is that the expansion of the existing plant in Sumner would be back on as the plan to move forward with. Pierce County agreed to participate, and a new ILA was entered into. This is a really entertaining op-ed piece that I would, I'll send to you if you would like to see it. I was going to read it. I'm not right now. But those are pipes with teeth, so that gives you some idea of what it's talking about. Moving on, 1984, Bonnie Lake, Sumner, Pierce County, and the Southville Sewer District executed a new agreement. This agreement was to determine how they're going to improve existing wastewater transmission among those different regions and take it all down to the Sumner Wastewater Treatment Facility. This is where we begin to see discussions about joint capacity ownership at Sumner Wastewater Treatment Facility. In 1991, Pierce County acquires the South Hill Sewer District, which up to this point had been its own entity, and all of that is incorporated into the Chambers Creek sewerage system. Okay. 2002, Pierce County and Bonnie Lake execute the Sanitary Sewer Transfer Agreement, and what this did is it basically took transfers of the county sewer service area that were necessary to align with the urban growth area boundaries established as part of the Growth Management Act. So basically, we were right-sizing the sewer service area to incorporate those areas that were not incorporated before that belonged to Pierce County. It basically outlined terms and conditions of the transfer basically formalized that those areas would be included in the City of Bonnie Lake sewer service area and that would all then go to the Sumner Wastewater Treatment Facility. So, shifting gears, now we're going to go specifically to the interlocal agreements. As you know, what we're talking about is a third. So obviously there's been two prior to that. The first one was initiated in 2002, the next one in 2012. What is shown here is the purpose statements taken directly out of each of those agreements. I'm not going to bother to read through them, but basically they say, hey, this is an emergency. We need to agree to upgrade the plant down in Sumner. We've got, you know, we're going to agree on who's going to run the consultants, how we're going to pay for these improvements, and what's going to happen with the capacity of the plant. The 2012 purpose statement was basically a restatement of the 2002 purpose statement, except that there was a few clarifying words and phrases inserted, and they took out some language specific to the 2002 agreement. So I will continue moving. That brings us to the proposed interlocal agreement that we're now calling 2024 Cooperative Wastewater Agreement. The purpose here is to basically address how we're going to manage and share costs at the Sumner Wastewater Treatment Facility. We're going to define capacity ownership, and we're going to describe how those amounts will be used moving forward. In addition, and probably, honestly, one of the biggest drivers here, if not the biggest driver here, is that under the Federal Clean Water Act administered through the Department of Ecology at the state level, we're required to have a pretreatment program for non-industrial wastewater. So what that means is we have to have a program set up that will go to all our non-residential users and ensure that what they are discharging complies with necessary regulations so that we can avoid having any biological upsets or any disturbances to the environment down at the treatment plant where it discharges into the river. In addition to that, we use this opportunity to remove outdated legacy language that spoke about previous projects, you know, and the management of those projects. And then we also decided to use this opportunity to add additional language to increase transparency and frankly, to help strengthen Bonnie Lake's position when we're talking about how this facility is shared. These were things that were not included in the previous ILA. So, what changed? On the right, on the left side of the screen, you see what we're calling the deleted provisions from the 2012 agreement. And I just listed the section headings there. That is all language that was deleted from the new ILA. What we added to the new ILA is Section 2, which is the definition of terms. Section 3, we actually specify a mandatory review period every 5 years that the agreement must be reviewed. Looks like I got my section numbers backwards here, but I'll go ahead and jump to Section 5, which says joint facility operations and maintenance. We clarify capacity ownership, management, consultant responsibilities, and we have the new pretreatment program in there. Section 4, administration. We increase the number of council seats on the joint advisory committee to 3 from 1. We created a technical working group at the staff level, which will be responsible for reviewing many things, including any expenses that come up that could be or that would be more than $100,000. The technical working group will make recommendations to the joint advisory committee as needed and when necessary. Section 6, cost sharing. We actually went into the details regarding how budget is set, how billing is to occur, how it's calculated, how we go about planning for capital and compliance improvements, and how we're going to handle unbudgeted major operating expenses. And then finally, we have now an actual termination clause in there, which at this point, the notice of termination has a 10-year advance notice requirement. However, we still see that as advantage, considering there was nothing like that in the previous agreement. So the city of Bonnie Lake does have the option now to be able to say, hey, here's our 10-year notice. We're out. And the reason that 10 years was set is because right now at the staff level, we believe that's reasonable for the time it would take to get permitting, financing together, design, and actually construct an alternative treatment plant to what we're currently using in Sumner. So what happens if the new ILA is not approved? I point at Councilmember McClyman. That's his question. If it's not approved, we continue to work under the terms of the previous ILA. However, we will need to come forward with a secondary agreement, if you will, that would govern or would establish the pretreatment program. The pretreatment program is required by law. We have no flexibility there, and so we would need to continue to that part of all of this to move forward. And then also, if this new ILA is not approved, the new provisions that we tried to get in there to create greater engagement, transparency, and accountability will not be part of the agreement. So we won't have those things. We won't have the termination clause. We won't have the mandatory 5-year review period. We won't have some of those other things that make this new agreement much better. What happens if it is approved? The new ILA takes effect. The City Council will need to appoint 3 members to the Joint Advisory Committee. We will start a meeting with Sumner staff as part of the technical working group, and the city will have greater ability to obtain records and information about the facility and operations moving forward. And that is the end of my presentation. I'm happy to take questions. As I said, my desire is that this will be on the agenda for next week for authorization for the mayor to sign.
And I have, as part of this, that it could potentially go on the upcoming consent agenda, but the Councilmember McClyman's and in just second guessing, this is something you wouldn't want on the consent agenda. Yeah. I didn't think so. So,
we would, instead of going through that and then having a modification, can Deputy Mayor, can we just put it on for a full council? Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Johnstone. Do we have any questions at the moment for, yes, Councilmember Baldwin?
You said that was so fast. Are you saying you're tabling this so that we can talk more about this? I thought you said it was time sensitive. The mayor has to sign it next week. I swear you
didn't. No, the staff's recommendation would be that it would move forward for approval or for council's authorization for the mayor to sign next week. But if you choose to just have it for discussion, so be it.
Right.
Excellent.
Okay.
Yeah, he's talking about putting on full council issues rather than on consent.
So in other words,
that's the only difference. Yeah. We would still vote essentially next week
and have another discussion period available.
Okay.
Okay. But that's what the council
about. I'll save these questions for next week.
Well, I would ask them now.
Yeah?
Are you for real?
Yeah. I know. That's why I told you. I tried to table this thing again. Because
I know.
Like, I don't even know. But, you know, because I think that, in my mind, you know, Council Member McClendon's had one of the most excellent points that I've heard in a long time was about no levers and dials. So, you know, this particular agreement is very well done and it's put together by staff and covers a lot of different things, but it doesn't change anything. So, you know, for me as a council member, I'm like looking at this thing like, really? You know? And there's a bunch of like weird stuff going on in the background there with it, but, you know, I don't really see the necessity, but, you know, alternatively, critically, I have to look at myself and say, well, what's the alternative? That's what I look for with other members. So, you know, it's like, if I don't vote, I'm clearly not going to vote for this particular version of the Paragon, but that doesn't really matter because, you know, what's the better idea? The no alternative in my mind right now for me is okay because we still continue to trudge along with our agreement. I'm not too excited about, but it has worked out fairly well. If the council looked into it significantly, you know, like our fire inspection services is being done by Sumner, which is great. I think there needs to be a lot more cooperation there on different issues. This also puts the sewer inspection for commercial type activities within Sumner's jurisdiction. So we have that thing going on. Again, I think that probably goes on pretty well. I think there's a lot of sharing thing needs to go on there. But, you know, short answer, long answer is just like, yeah, no. For me, I don't know whether Councilmember McClymans is still in the same, or did you think of some better way to do this type of thing, because what's the alternative?
We don't have one right now.
I know, right?
There's no other option. We got to put stuff somewhere.
Oh, no, it goes down there, and right now it continues on. You know, it's not like tomorrow they're going to shut the thing off.
Right.
There is an option. Just pull the pretreatment language out, move that forward, and say we're going to work through the rest of the agreement. That is an option. I don't know if I think that's worse than what we have currently.
Yeah.
But we have to, you know, we look at this and, yeah, I'm still uncomfortable with it as well as council member Swatman. So,
now, Mr. Johnstone, if you could just
Mr. Johnstone's credit, to Mr. Johnstone's credit, they've worked really hard on this and they have, along with council, to try to give us mechanisms. Right?
Come a long way.
But, you know, are they effective and what are what I don't have in my mind is I'm looking for knobs and dials to help us ensure that for our utility rates and our utility system that we have dials, that is visibility into the system and why it's expensive, and knobs to help us control those expenses going forward. And I don't see a lot of knobs and dials in here. I see some visibility that three members on council are there. But there's no dial, right? Because all they can do is just say, oh, count on staff to go to a working group, and Sumner can still decide they're going to do what they want to do, right? There's nothing. And if they do something we don't agree with, then we can give them a 10-year notice.
Right.
Now, Mr. Johnson, as far as the pre-treatment that Councilmember McClellan's talked about, that is mandatory, right? That's federal law that that we have to comply with.
Its origins are with the Clean Water Act. So
right.
So that's unrelated to this agreement. It just happens to be in this agreement.
Yeah.
Separate
it? It was included in this agreement because it was included as a – there was a section in the 2012 agreement that said, hey, when this becomes a requirement, we'll address it through a new ILA.
Okay. And Councilmember Roach has a comment.
So a question on – so I think we took out tree loans previously, you know, taking care of certain things. Are we going to have any on the horizon here that we need to take out to take care of things that we know of unless we hit capacity?
There will be – we're going to have to pursue additional funding to complete the dryer project that's currently underway design-wise down in the city of Sumner. And right now I'd have to have Sumner and our team, our engineering team that's been meeting with them, confirm. But I think that that upgrade is somewhere around a $13 million project total.
So, and that's coming up in, they're working on it right now, so.
They're working on it right now. I'd have to get a debrief from my engineering folks, but I think they're getting ready to go through a pre-procurement process for some of the equipment. I would anticipate, I believe we're talking construction in 25.
So, a year from now.
So when we get to that point where we've got to borrow the $13 million, is that a split so we would?
We would be borrowing a portion of that. I believe we'd be borrowing 54% of that. Whatever that total
on usage.
It's based on our capacity ownership.
Right.
So yeah. When that happens, if it follows what the other 20-year loans were, we're going to have an additional probably $300,000 a year.
I'd hesitate to say exactly what it would be, but yes, there will be additional debt service to be paid towards that, because the mechanism that we're planning on doing is similar to what we've done with the City of Sumner in the past to jointly pursue Public Works Trust Fund loans to complete the project. That's been the same vehicle that's been used previously to do the plan expansion projects.
Okay. I'm just looking. I think you've done great work on this. I mean, you can't negotiate. We're not in a position where we're going to negotiate. This has been done for 30 years or whatever, and it is what it is, but I'm trying to look at, you know, reducing those costs. And we talked about the pilot fees that are now done. So we do have that money available each month. The first loan, I believe, is going to come due in July, which is going to free up more money. So potentially you could take that money to reduce rates, but it looks like we're going to go right back into another loan. And
I think it might be pretty much a wash. As far as that, we will be paying off some debt service here before too long. Sherry, we can discuss this a little bit more. This is probably new for her since she's been away from the office and the discussion you and I had, Councilmember Roach. But there is some debt service coming off. I believe there was three that I sent you. One to be paid off, I believe, this year. The other two further out. I think there were 2030 and something similar.
Sounds like a ripe issue to put on the retreat if we're doing it in May and this is coming up in July.
Yeah.
Sherry, Councilmember Roach's question pertained to using existing debt service payments to pay down rates, essentially.
Hey,
Sherry? Yep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That was all factored into the FDS rates. So, Brian, was this project in the FDS rates?
The dryer project? I'm going to go back and take a look. I believe it was, but I double checked.
Then this will be an additional loan and require additional money because the loans coming off was factored into our current rates. So there's no quote savings.
Okay. And when you say FCS, just for clarification, what does that stand for?
That's our consultants, financial consulting.
Oh, that's services.
Services, I believe, yeah.
And Councilman Folger, let's start your raise.
The guy that stood right here. Well, I'm just looking at this. I'm confused on this capacity ownership for the joint facility, and that if Bonnie Lake is a 54% owner and Sumner's only a 46%, then as far as I'm concerned, we own, if we had shares, we own the lion's share, and we should have more decisions.
But we don't have any ownership. That's capacity you're talking about.
That's ownership, or that's correct. That's treatment capacity.
That's
based on usage.
Yeah,
we use 54% of the system.
Mm-hmm. Right. We
essentially what she's saying. So that's why we
out of the total treatment capacity of the plant, we own 54% of that.
Okay. And one more question for
you. Yes, Councilman. Sherry, the payment in lieu of taxes money, was that factored in as well?
Yeah, it was.
That's what there's some savings. That's
wonderful. Okay. Any further questions before we or movement?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. Sorry, guys.
Yes, Ms. Ryerson.
With the cost that citizens that are on sewer pay, is that because of us paying the city of Sumner to use that facility? Is that why our sewer rates are so high?
You, just briefly, your sewer rates are basically composed of two components. You have an availability fee, and then you have a volumetric fee. So what our sewer users are paying is based off of both of those things. Your availability fee is really what is set at such a point that if everybody stopped using sewer and paid zero on their volumetric, that base fee revenue will still cover your maintenance and operations moving forward. So it's a combination of the two, I guess, is a short answer, Councilmember Cuba.
And you have the 12% or whatever it is currently for the general fund.
Is that the utility tax?
12%, yeah, something like that. Yeah, there's all kinds of issues in there. Tell me why Sumner's rate is, you know, that's an open question to write. Totally different than ours, so that's always been a bugaboo. But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We talked about it at committee level for umpteen hours.
Yeah.
Big issue, yeah. It's a good question, yeah.
Oh, same plant, different rate, weird.
That's an issue.
Well, you know, does anybody else have any further questions before we close the meeting out and try to move on? Councilmember McClyman.
So is this on the agenda for next week for approval then? Do we agree with that? Or
Council, yeah, Deputy Mayor.
Discussion.
Yeah.
Actually, what does Council want to do?
That's what we're
yeah. What's that?
We'll find out next week.
Okay, so, yeah, let's put it on the agenda and go from there.
Yep. Full council issues. There you go.
All right. Well, I believe that brings our meeting to a close. Excellent presentation from both of you, and thank you for enduring my passionate query. Thank you, too. And let's bring this meeting to a close.
What's the fuck? Thank you.